Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Another lovely Friday in the hills as late afternoon progresses into evening. A minute and a half past the hour. Golden light bathing the Horn Studio via our south-facing windows. It's Friday. It's Friday on the front porch. Get back, relax. Have a seat in the rocking chair. Put your feet up on the porch rail. Mama won't mind. Not on Friday. And just say what's on your mind. Nothing in particular. Wouldn't you have a little fun? Wouldn't you have a little serious? Wouldn't you have just about anything we want to? Wouldn't you have a pull out of the jug over there, the one with the old corn cob in the top. Maybe an ice-cold long neck sitting in the zinc galvanized wash tub up to their bottle caps in ice and a little rock salt thrown on to make it extra cold. Or maybe just a glass of sweet iced tea, lemon or no lemon, however you want it. Or, well, I won't offer you the water because this is West Virginia and it ain't safe to drink. That's what we call being neighborly. Not poisoning the folks who show up to visit. It's Front Porch Friday. Come on by. And I don't know about you, but I want to get the ugly stuff out of the way first. Let's just sweep out the racist trash of the right wing so we can move on to things that aren't quite so nasty. Get the nastiness out, and we can enjoy our camaraderie and our collegiality and our neighborliness. Lean over. Somebody run down to the back fence and open it up so folks can come up from the backyard way, too, would you? But before too many more people get here, let's get the racist trash out in the trash where racist trash belongs. I'm talking, of course, about racist trash-in-chief Flush Flimball, that street drug junkie that is now the head of the Repig-Lickin' Party. He showed up on, God almighty, he showed up on Greta Van Susteren's show. We can't tell if Greta was surprised or not, because her brows are permanently arched in a look of inquisitive surprise by the virtue of the miracles of plastic surgery and Botox. I'm told that every time Greta does try to raise her eyebrows, her pantyhose come up. Yeah, that old gag, sorry. But anyway, let's get the racist trash out of the way. Flush Flimball showed up on Greta Van Susteren's show on the phony news network, I mean Fox, and engaged in a little colloquy with Greta. Well, at least Greta could feel safe because, after all, she doesn't have to worry about Flush trying to grope her, what with her not being a little Dominican boy and all. Discussing the Henry Louis Gates issue, which is just continues to astonish me. Now the big, has he apologized enough? Has he apologized to the police enough? There we go, apologizing again. I say, you know, I said they were stupid. I didn't mean to say they were stupid when I said they were stupid, just that they were... Uh-oh. You see the problem with apologies? So Greta Van Susteren and legal expert Flush Flimball, and he does, he's a legal expert. He's had several brushes with the law now. He knows a little bit about the system. But they want to talk about Henry Louis Gates and Obama's response to it. Here we go.
I think Obama is largely misunderstood by a lot of people. I think if you, his associations in his young life and early adult life matter, the people that mentored him matter. And we're finding out this guy's got a chip on his shoulder. He's angry at this country. He's not proud of it.
He's an angry black man, angry at this country, and he's not proud of it. And by not proud of it, he doesn't mean he's not proud of the fact that he's an angry man. He's not proud of this country. When this country has so much to be proud of, my friends, so very much to be proud of. We have the Klan to be proud of, who protected our white women for nearly 150 years now. Thank God for the Klan. We have skinheads to be proud of. Why isn't Barack Obama proud of America?
Talked about health care last night, never once talked about the greatness of our health care. Once again, when it comes...
Where is it? Oh, dear, this is getting off to a rough start. I'm yelling already. I'm sorry. The greatness of our health care. Well, I guess if you're Flush Flimball, it is great. Because you can sort of dodge into a little program and go off to Arizona and talk to the horses for a little bit, just like Mrs. McCain did, and come back and swear that you're clean, and then a year or so later you get busted with an illegal prescription for Viagra flying off on an all-boys weekend to the Dominican Republic. Plenty to be proud of in our health care system. I'm sure that if Rush Limbaugh had a serious illness, it would be taken care of. Oh, wait, he did. He abused drugs so much. He abused narcotics, street drugs, that is, so much that he drove himself deaf. And being a millionaire, the healthcare industry responded to him. With all the alacrity and aplomb that they responded to, for instance, Steve Jobs in hustling him up a liver recently. Oh, you go right to the top of the list. And Flush Flimball got cochlear implants. Wonder how many other people need them that can't get them in this country. He was paying cash, so there was no bean-counting insurance executive there to say, we're sorry, this is an experimental procedure, and you're just going to have to stay deaf, Rush. Oh, no. Money talks, baby. Money talks. Why won't he talk about the greatness? You know what, Flush? Maybe he doesn't talk about... Maybe... You're right. You're right, Rush. Barack Obama might be an angry man. Because God knows I'm an angry man. And I know a little bit of how maybe Barack Obama felt as he helplessly watched his mother die. Because I watched mine die. She died shortly after the birth of our youngest. Medical negligence and medical malpractice cheated my youngest child of ever knowing her grandmother. An amazing and delightful and joyous woman. She languished, my mother did, in a medical intensive care unit at a hellhole that's supposed to be quite the hospital, a hellhole in Birmingham, Alabama, called the University of Alabama Medical Center. She languished there for 7 months. Her physician back at home, you see, she had an enlarged spleen. And her physician back at home let her go so long that by the night before the surgery, the splenectomy that was scheduled for her, my mother's abdomen was bigger than it was the night before I was born. She told me that the night before the surgery. It was the last meaningful conversation I ever had with her.
I sat and read to her, oddly enough, out of a book called Rush Limbaugh is a Big Fat Idiot by Al Franken, and my mother laughed. But that spleen was too big, and the doctor went in and removed it, and he forgot to put anticoagulant in her abdomen so that there were no open veins or anything, but just where the spleen had laid for so long seeped blood, and so they had to go back in. And being a 72-year-old woman, my mother did not survive two immediate surgical insults right on top of each other. And then they took her into the bacterial cesspool that is the UAB medical intensive care unit and the surgical intensive care unit, where she was on a ventilator for a while until they brought a, and she was getting off the ventilator. She was off the ventilator, breathing on her own. And they brought some kid in and set him right next to her as he was coming out of anesthesia, having just been shot in a gangbang drive-by, and he came up out of his anesthesia screaming obscenities and terrified my poor mother to the point where she couldn't breathe again, and they had to jam the ventilator back down her throat, and they never got her off of it again for 7 months. At the end of those 7 months, when the $1 million worth of Medicare coverage had been used up, the doctor got my sisters and my father and I together and calmly explained to us that it was time for my family to stop playing God and to let my poor mother go on and die. Like I said, that stop playing God speech only came after all the Medicare was billed out. In other words, the doctors wanted us to stop playing God after they had stopped playing accountant. So, you know, I'm probably projecting a little bit. My apologies to our horn psychotherapist, Rick Goodner. I know I am, though. But I can imagine that having watched his mother scramble just to find out if she was going to have coverage for cancer treatment while she was trying to battle that hellish disease might have colored Barack Obama's feelings about the healthcare system in this country. Lord knows watching my mother's demise influenced mine. He's not proud of it! Well, do go ahead and analyze the President of the United States a little bit more, you damn junkie.
So something American, he criticizes it.
All right, let me stop. Let's go back to Gates for a second. Gates is in his house and shows identifications, says, this is my house, this is my name. You don't think that that was an unusual arrest?
I'm not talking about the incident. Okay. Obama didn't know what happened.
Okay.
We don't know what happened. The facts, as we tape this, are unknown. Obama admitted he didn't know what happened, and yet the cops acted stupidly. For the President of the United, look at what's going on. We are in a...
No, Flush. Let's look at what's going on with you. The cops did act stupidly. There's a statute out there. This was sent to me earlier in the day. I found it quite interesting. Let's take a quick look at the statute under which Henry Louis Gates was charged. It is Massachusetts Code, Chapter 272, Section 53. Common nightwalkers, common streetwalkers, both male and female, common railers and brawlers, persons with offensive and disorderly acts or language, accost or annoy persons of the opposite sex, lewd, wanton, and lascivious persons in speech or behavior, idle and disorderly persons, disturbers of the peace, keepers of noisy and disorderly houses, and persons guilty of indecent exposure may be punished by imprisonment in a jail or house of correction for not more than 6 months, or by a fine of not more than $200, or by both such fine and imprisonment. That is the code section Henry Louis Gates was charged with violating. Let's go through those. Let's go through those elements. Common nightwalkers. Was Henry Louis Gates a common nightwalker? There is no evidence to suggest it. Common streetwalker? Again, no evidence. Common railers and brawlers? No, no, I haven't heard anything about Henry Louis Gates railing and brawling in any of the local Cambridge, Massachusetts night spots. Persons who, with offensive and disorderly acts or language, accost or annoy persons of the opposite sex? No, sorry. The only reason, the only thing that led the cops to that house was the fact that somebody called and said, "There's a Negro trying to get in that house over there!" Lewd, wanton, and lascivious persons in speech or behavior? No, even the most police-sympathetic reports don't indicate any conduct of Dr. Gates was either lewd, wanton, or lascivious. Idle and disorderly persons? No, I don't think he was idle. He was busy answering the door. That would put paid to being idle. He must be a disorderly person, because any time a dark-skinned person questions the motive of a light-skinned person, well, it's obviously the dark-skinned person's fault now, isn't it? It boils down to a crime that I like to refer to as LWB, living while black. Disturbers of the peace. No, the only disturbance of the peace was conducted by the Cambridge Police Department, who went flying to the scene at the mention of a suspicious black man at a house. Keepers of noisy and disorderly houses? Nah, I don't think so. It was only disorderly insofar as he was, you know, trying to get into his own house. But then again, I don't want the police. They'll arrest the whole fam-damily here if they ever catch us on one of the evenings that we've locked ourselves out and have to send Ferg in through some window or another or down the coal chute. Whew. Yeah, we'll be... Persons guilty of indecent exposure. No, not that either. So that's... you know, how are you going to be disorderly in your own home? Beats the hell out of me. But that's what Henry Louis Gates was charged with. So at some point, no, flush. No, so far you're not. So far you're swinging and missing, buddy.
Major offensive in Afghanistan. We have an attack led by Obama on our private sector. This is a purposeful attempt to destroy the...
What? An attack on our private sector? President Obama, hello? Would you attack me too, please? And I don't need $1 trillion. That last attack of yours on the private sector that wound up with Wall Street getting a whole lot of our tax money, would you attack us? I know there's probably several people within the listening range of my voice who would like you to attack them in similar fashion. Tell you what, I'm cheap. Attack me to the tune of $10 million, would you please, President Obama? And that's only because I want to be able to build a house somewhere that isn't in toxic land. Apart from that, we could probably get by on a cool million. But attacks on the private sector? You know what? I don't think Russia's 12-step program's working very well, boys and girls.
Private sector as it exists. We have numerous problems. Job numbers are out this morning, and they're up, unexpectedly up, even though we've rescued the economy. And the President of the United States does not comment on local arrests and things like that. That question, I think, if it wasn't a setup, it has to be. It has to have been a setup. That whole press conference about health care last night, that's the last question. That's when he came alive. He admits he doesn't know what was going on in there. Called the cops stupid. The cop that he called stupid.
Yeah, because there's never been a stupid cop. No, no. Mark Furman. Mark Furman, white courtesy phone.
gave mouth-to-mouth resuscitation to Reggie Lewis of the Boston Celtics when he was dying.
The police officer has sort of an extraordinary history. The Boston Celtics, when Reggie Lewis was dying, so, gave them.
Oh, thank you, Greta. In case nobody heard the junkie say it, let's make sure you reinforce that. Has he rescued kittens from a tree, too?
And racial profiling? I mean, race. Let's face it, President Obama's black.
No. Well, there goes the neighborhood. Let's face it, President Obama's black. When did you get the memo, Rush? Jesus. I mean, wait a minute. Back during the campaign, weren't you calling him a Hafrican? You're going to have to make your mind up, or what's left after the OxyContin got done with it, Rush. Pick a side, pick the right lane or the left lane, but you can't drive in the middle lane, Flush.
History, the Boston Celtics, when Reggie Lewis was dying, gave them mouth-to-mouth.
And racial profiling, race. Let's face it, President Obama's black, and I think he's got a chip on his shoulder, I think.
Oh, well, okay, he's got a chip on his shoulder then. Yeah, that because any time a person of color gets upset about something in your little lily-white country, Flush, it must be because they've got a chip on their shoulder, not because there's been, 300, 400 years of racial injustice in this country. That couldn't possibly be it, though, could it, Rush?
I think there are elements in this country he doesn't like and he never has liked.
You're an element of this country I don't like and never have liked. The birthers? So what you're saying is that Barack Obama has to just sit there and turn the other cheek till he's fresh out of cheeks, and then he's got to find another one to turn. Am I to understand you correctly there, Flush? That's what I thought. Got a chip on his shoulder. The way that Martin Luther King had a chip on his shoulder. Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee had a chip on their shoulder, right? The way that Malcolm had a chip on his. And let's not limit it to the African American community. Cesar Chavez, he had a chip on his shoulder. Yeah, anybody who's ever done anything that doesn't sit well in your little lily white world, they couldn't possibly be a problem, Flush. It's that they've got a chip on their shoulder.
And he's using the power of the presidency to remake the country. Look at Greta. He goes around the country, apologizes for this country everywhere he goes. He never once refers to, thinks about, talks about American exceptionalism.
There's that phrase. I just love that phrase. The right wing is in love with that phrase. I think it's charming. American exceptionalism. As our pal Marty put it last night, we're exceptional, all right. We're exceptionally greedy. We are exceptionally politically naive. We're exceptionally anesthetized. Oh, we're exceptional, all right, Flush. We are certainly exceptional. God almighty. $40 million a year for that garbage. Kind of blows your mind, doesn't it? Blows mine. So at least we've dealt with some of the racist trash, and I feel better for having done so. It's 25 minutes past the hour. We're off to a rollicking start of tonight's Front Porch Friday here on the Horn. You got a thought? You got something you want to share? You know how to do it. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, 304-658-3333. If you want to dial in directly, that'll be fine by me, too. You can reach me via email, bobkincaid@gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported, and we can We'll take all of that we can stand. Liberal voice, this is the horn.
Disorder in the house. The turf runs over. Plaster falling down in pieces by the couch of pain. Disorder in the house. Time to duck and cover. Helicopters hover over rough terrain. Disorder.
Thank you, Warren Zevon. You are gone, but you are not forgotten. That seems so appropriate. Disorder in the house. Let's go straight to the phones. You know the number again, 877-443-2366, 304-658-3333. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, I thought I'd call in before you head off to Washington, D.C. to get head on.
All right.
Yeah, regarding this Gates thing, I'm going to have to take a different view on this one.
Yeah?
Yep. I'm going to have to, because of what I've read regarding the facts. If they release the tape and Gates is acting irate, that will go in the cop's favor. If he was screaming at any time of the police officers, because I tell you, I can speak from experience. When someone calls in a disturbance, I remember someone called a disturbance at my apartment building, and the person next door was high on drugs, and he was, I guess, passed out or something. I don't know. And the cops came up to me, and if I wasn't there, what would have happened was they opened the door. He didn't answer. And they said, "What is your neighbor there?" And I said, I assume he is still there. He goes, "We've had some disturbance call." I said, "Do you know anything about it?" I said, I've heard maybe a little bit of scream, but there wasn't too much. So they went into his house. It was pitch black, and he starts screaming, "What the hell are you doing in my house? Get the F out." And if I wasn't there, he would have gone to jail. So I guess what I'm saying here is an instance, if someone calls in a disturbance, and someone did call in a disturbance, they need to talk to the person who called in the disturbance, who said two black people with backpacks were making breaking an entry. But you know, the funny thing is, Bob, is they can't track that person down, or that person doesn't want to comment. So maybe they had a thing against Gates. So that's the confusion in itself. But as I said, if they do release the tapes and he is irate at any time during the tapes, it's not going to go well in his favor. And that's what I've been reading on the story. And that's what I think people should take into consideration.
But David, are you saying that this is such a forlorn and sad little country now that you can't have a bad day and you can't be irate? I mean, because consider the totality of the circumstances.
Yeah.
Here's a guy who's just gotten home from a trip to Asia, right?
Uh-huh.
Jet lag, anyone? I've had it. Sucks.
Right.
And he gets home, he's tired, and he realizes he's locked himself out of his house. And I mean, I know I power swear over much smaller stuff than that. You know, just the whole Yosemite Sam flag stagging blastle fracking ass and blastwatten, and sometimes it gets loud, just because I don't like keeping all that stuff bottled up inside. So you get inside and you're like, huh. And then the cops are there, and it's this whole thing. You know, he shows that you know. You know, why do I have to open the door to you? You know, this guy's, I mean, he's got rights, okay? We do still have civil rights in this country. And by civil rights, I mean those that are guaranteed under the Constitution and under the Bill of Rights. And there's nothing said that he was under a duty to open the door to that officer. There's one simple question, and if you're going to fault him for anything, when he said, "Open the door, sir," you got a warrant?
I'm not saying it's right, but what I'm saying is if they do release the tapes, you could be opening up a can of worms if he was acting really angry. And if he said some surly things to the officer, again, this is the problem we face in this country. We really can't talk to the police in this fashion. And it's unfair. And like I said, if I wasn't there, my neighbor friend would have gone to jail. They opened the door. He didn't answer. His door was unlocked. It's a touchy situation when it gets into people who when they call a disturbance in, and you're also playing with emotions here. So like I said, if they do release the tape, the police officer that was with him, the black police officer that was with him, see, we're getting into more, we're getting into a place to nowhere. This is where they're going to have to take a settlement or something. I mean, because if they want to release the tape, I'm sure that's what they'll do. And if there's any time that Gates was screaming, you know what's going to happen, and I know what's going to happen, Bob.
Oh, angry black man.
Angry black man.
But, you know, somewhere along the way, we're going to have to sit down. And, you know, that's part of the discussion we never have about race in this country is there a problem with being angry? I mean, is that a crime, too, being angry and black? And I'm not saying you. I'm saying, you know, the nation, because that's a theme, a meme, if you will, that the right wing has pushed for oh so long. You know, the God knows, the Barack Obama wasn't allowed to so much as sneeze on the campaign. Oh, he's sneezing angrily.
I think it's certain areas that are like that, and I know that Harvard has experienced this certain areas like that as well. But as I said, my neighbor was white, and he was agitated, and he was yelling and screaming and swearing. And I said, no, listen, it's cool. He just had a hard time. And if they would have searched that place, also I saved them from this. If they would have searched this place, they would have found a boatload of marijuana, and he would have gone to jail. So, I mean, what I'm saying is I know it's not fair, but there's a point of what can you do? Do you want to stir it up? Do you want to stir up the hornet's nest even more? And when we do,
if that's what it takes to finally have an honest discussion about race in this country and why people might be angry, yeah, I kind of do.
Well, you know what? I would like to do that too, Bob. But the problem is when we face the arm hold of the media, they're going to turn this around. They're already turning this around. See what they did to Obama.
Yeah, with the mandatory apology.
Yeah,
sure.
The mandatory apology. But you know, I think there's a problem with we do have a serious problem. And the other reason I called in is it's kind of like a reverse one. Even though I don't agree primarily because of the fact of if they release the tapes, I mean it could turn into like that Duke University thing. They'll turn it around. I mean, I think Gates is probably just going to take his settlement and just go because I don't think he wants to deal with the police for months on end. Unfortunately, I think that's how it's going to go down. But the other thing I wanted to do was I wondered if you heard about this case. Nobody's talking about it, by the way, so I thought I'd mention it. Did you hear about this case about this kid named Walter Curry?
By name, I can't identify it.
15-year-old from Kansas City. Or rather, Poplar Bluff, Missouri.
Yeah.
And he was doused with gasoline and lit on fire by some white teens.
I'm guessing he was not white?
You guessed it. And you want to hear something more insane? See, this is going to make you crazy. When I listened to this case, I was like, this is insane. They've already released the white kids after a month. Now here's the kicker. The parents have been notified of Walter Curry that he is being charged in connection with another incident where he had a previous fight. So how do you like that? They don't get a hate crime. They get nothing. The white kids get to go free. And the black kid if you saw this picture, Bob, you would be, oh my God. Second to third degree burns on his whole body.
Jesus. And the motive, the rationale, not rationale, but what the motive? Why?
Well, you know, it's the angry black man. It's the angry black man charges again. You know how it is. They say, well, we heard there was a previous fight, but I mean, I don't care if the kid did have a previous fight. Dousing someone with gasoline. See, this is the problem.
Yeah, that ain't self defense.
I don't have a one strike. I don't have a three strike policy, Bob. If you let's light someone on fire with gasoline, I don't care what age you are. You're going to jail. I don't care. You're going to jail.
What are the ages on this case?
I think they're 15 and 16 around that age. Let me see. Was doused with gasoline and set afire by two white schoolmates. Now faces charges himself as he recovers from burns over most of his body. Was burned on June 13 after an exchange with two teens with whom he reportedly had a previous altercation. So the youth was allegedly doused him with the gasoline, lit the fire, had been charged with assault as a juvenile. See, that's the problem. I mean, this is not, we don't want to be tough on these crimes, no matter what circumstance. And we're going to have it happen again and again and again. And let me tell you something, people. When you see this picture, I don't care how sympathetic you would be for a minor and say, well, they were kids. They're just school children. No, these kids have to go to jail. They have to spend hard time. Because, like I said, 6 second to third degree burns. And I think the insult, you know what it is, Bob. It's not doing anything, but to double the insult, it's like, were you in a previous fight, young man?
Well, yeah, it's the same thing that gets asked of a rape victim. Well, how were you dressed?
So, again, I guess this is the
question. He was asking to be doused with gasoline and nearly burned a lot. Sure.
So the question is, are we going to start enforcing hate crimes? And if we don't...
Oh, no. See, that would be making thought a crime. Everything that's wrong with the so-called criminal justice system in this country, it's not because of squishy, soft-on-crime liberals, because
right.
There just aren't that many of them left. It can be traced to the people who want to treat criminal punishment as who fetishize it, okay?
Yeah.
Who get off on the misfortunes of others, because it somehow, by some sort of sick, psychotic transference, makes them feel better about themselves. And frankly, you know, look at the number of young African American men who, you know, teenagers, whatever, who get, well, you know, we're going, every state has laws whereby someone who would ordinarily be charged as a juvenile can be escalated and charged and tried as an adult and sent to grown-up prison, i.e. grown-up criminal university.
Mm.
Has a petition been filed to treat these two juveniles as an adult and try them as such?
I think so far only this is a local news story. You know how this works, and they're trying to get it into the national story, and the parents are outraged because of the fact that all of a sudden they decided to charge him with something that happened on June 10th, but Walter said he didn't have anything to do with it. So then you have this as well. I mean, this is what they can do, Bob. They just say, which is just insane to me. The guy has, it's the low blow, it's the, have you no decency, sir. The fact he has second and third degree burns, and you're going to have to say, call up the parents and say, well, was he in a previous fight? It's insane.
If your mama, or if how do you not respond, why are you asking me about a previous fight? Somebody tried to kill him.
Can you imagine if this kid, this kid didn't make it? I mean, there would be riots in Missouri.
I don't know that I'd characterize them as riots, but there would certainly... Right. But there would certainly be a lot of justifiable anger.
Yeah, justifiable anger.
And if you, exactly. and the thing is, right now, if you ask about the two perps, I know what the answer is. Well, you know,
yeah.
they're juveniles, and we can't give out that kind of information.
That's basically what they said. They can only give limited details on the incident.
Oh, it's already in the story. Well, how did I know?
That's the problem. We're going to have to. I know people don't want to do it, but we're going to have to be harsh on these crimes for a while here for this to happen. And if we're not, we're just going to have worse incidences of this.
Well, you know, last week we talked some about Tony Alamo. Remember that? The follower of the Prince of Peace, who was being charged and tried with having transported little girls across state lines, for purposes of sex.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's one of those hooray for justice kind of days because the jury in Arkansas convicted him today on 10 counts of taking minors across state lines for sex.
Wow.
But the thing is, there's no, you know, there's no death penalty involved with this. Of course, I don't adhere to the death penalty.
Right.
He said about the charges, CNN interviewed him last year, and he said, they're just trying to make our church look evil by saying I'm a pornographer, saying that I rape little children. I love children. I don't abuse them. Never have. Never will. Why were they after Jesus? It's the same reason Jesus is living within me. And, yeah, he's got compounds. I think it was Kate last week who referred to having seen one of his compounds. He's got compounds in Oklahoma and New Jersey, too.
Hmm.
But, yeah, and looking at the photograph of him, by the way, if there's ever a made-for-TV movie about him,
yeah.
If they don't cast, where'd his name go? Doggone it, I had it right. You know, played with Peter Fonda in Easy Rider. Come on.
Dennis Hopper.
Yeah, if they don't cast Dennis Hopper as this guy, they got no sense. Just like Robert Duvall missed out on the role of a lifetime being cast as Miss Mussolini. There are some things that just beg to happen. And Dennis Hopper as Tony Alamo, there you go.
One other thing I wanted to mention regarding the latest numbers in the Pakistan drone attacks. Now this is a question that maybe you didn't think of. Would you consider this a hate crime?
Work with me. How so?
Well, I would consider it a hate crime because of the fact that they constantly, under the veil of there were terrorists, it was Al-Qaeda, they were in the vicinity, and that's their excuse for every single time they blow up a wedding or a home. And again, I always ask myself, would it happen in America? How long would this last if this happened in America? And I don't know. To me, I look at every time we invade or attack a country as a hate crime. I think terrorism...
War is a hate crime. The first thing you have to do in order to engage in war is hate your enemy.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And dehumanize them? Sure.
So that makes us hypocrites on that point, on that line right there. When Barack Obama comes out on national TV and says we don't tolerate this type of actions, and then I just think of those drone attacks, and I'm like, well, how many times?
Yeah, operated by people for remotely operated.
Yeah.
The people flying the drones are sitting in a darkened room in front of a video monitor.
Right.
It's a video game. The people at the wedding party getting the Hellfire missiles, they're not real. And if you crash, you get a new drone to fly. And after 10,000 jihadis, you get an extra drone.
I heard a great term for it. They called it a world on terrorcraft.
War on terrorcraft?
Yeah, war on terrorcraft. And if you think about it, that's... Oh, and the last thing I wanted to mention was, do you really believe, honestly, now tell me, Bob, do you really believe that they did kill Bin Laden's son?
Oh, come on. I looked at that once, and then just, I went and read Dilbert or something.
but do you really believe it, or do you think, okay, yeah, they did?
Yeah, sure. That was my first, yeah, sure, they did.
Yeah. Well, Bob, as always, it's been enlightening. I hope you have a great time in D.C. and get a lot of work done and get a lot of progress. Well,
we're going to knock on a lot of doors, and we're going to make a lot of staffers look our family in the eye and tell them and make a decision. You know, hopefully influence them toward a decision.
Is there anything you suggest that we do for? While you're in D.C.?
Keep on reruns. I guess we are a week's worth of reruns, but not much I can do about that.
No, but what I was saying is while you're on reruns, we can invest that time in wisely with something.
Well, you know what? There's never a bad time to continue to press one's senators to get on board with Senate 696, the Appalachian Restoration Act, and to press one's member of the House to be signatory to H.R. 1310, the Clean Water Protection Act. And bear in mind, jot those notes down, because there's another bill that's going through Congress right now, and it is called the Clean Water Preservation Act. So there's one word from one of the bills we need and two words from another one of the bills that we need, and it's a totally separate bill that has nothing to do with what we're doing.
So it's S-96 and H-910?
What we're after is S-696.
Okay, yeah, 696.
And H.R. 1310. And H.R. 1310 is the Clean Water Protection Act.
Okay.
And S-696 is the Appalachian Restoration Act. And that's the thing. Don't let them don't confuse them, and don't let them be confused with the Clean Water Preservation Act.
Okay.
Because it's a completely different law. It's a good law. It needs to go through, but it's not what we're working on. So wear them out. And in fact, you know, it wouldn't hurt to call your elected representatives in the state and say, listen, I need you to pressure so-and-so and tell them that you want this passed. So, you know, there's more than one way to, skin an issue, so to speak.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, if you're doing that, then you're acting in support of the people who are in D.C. to be doing this.
All right, good deal. Thanks for that information, and let's see what we can do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hate to be away from the microphone for a week, but if anything justifies it, this does.
Understandable, completely understandable. You have a great time while you're there.
All right, thanks, David.
All right, later.
Take care. Pop culture correspondent David calling from Maine. And seriously, when we're up there doing what we're doing, if you are where you are and you're pushing for S-696, the Appalachian Restoration Act, and H.R. 1310, the Clean Water Protection Act, then you're doing what needs to be done. Because, you know, we're over 150 co-sponsors now in the House of Representatives. Mercy, think about it. If there were 150 co-sponsors of a bill to go bomb some brown people somewhere, it'd already have been to the floor for a vote. But since this has to do with trying to protect Appalachian people and giving them the full status of American citizens, yeah, it's a little harder to do. And, of course, you have powerful forces arrayed against the bills. In the Senate, you have Jay Rockefeller and Robert Byrd and Jim Bunning and Chinless Mitch McConnell, Democrats and Republicans, working together for the common good of the coal companies, trying to stop this bill. In the House of Representatives, my congressman will do what he can to stop it. So will Shelley Moore Capito from West Virginia's 2nd District. So will Alan Mollahan from West Virginia's 1st District. Mollahan and Ray Hall are Democrats. Shelley Moore, whose daddy was Arch, who was the biggest crook ever to occupy the governor's office in West Virginia, and she's just a version of him in a bad wig, they're acting in concert together. They're all friendly on this because they're going to protect... They're going to protect their purses because their purses get loaded so full it's hard to drag them around when you get to counting the coal money that goes into them. So it's going to take some work. It's going to take a lot of work to get this done. But so much work has already been done, and it's so damned impressive. So maybe you can pick up the phone and make some calls to your congressmen and your senators. And your local elected officials and say, you know, listen, I'm calling you about this because I want you to call Senator so-and-so. I want you to call Congressman so-and-so. And I want you to let them know that as an official of this town, city, county, state, that we're on board with this. Organize your neighbors. Talk to your friends. Get it going. Make it happen. Feel kind of funny giving you marching orders because this is not right-wing radio. But this is where that change that we all crave comes from. It has to be bottom-up. Where health care is concerned, if we're ever going to do anything about corporate Senator Max Baucus, D, corporations, and what he's trying to do to health care in the Senate Finance Committee, it's going to be a bottom-up movement. It's going to be people from all over the country putting intense pressure. It's going to be people in Louisiana calling Mary Landrieu. It's going to be people in Arkansas calling David Pryor and Blanche Lincoln. It's going to be people in Nebraska picking up the phone and wearing out the offices of Ben Nelson. They have got to feel the electoral heat. You know, remember, Max Baucus still can't find it in his soul to put a public option into his plan in the Senate Finance Committee, even though the American public as a whole is clamoring at the rate of 70, 75, 80% wanting that public option. Now, me, I'm a hard ass. I want to actually solve the problem. The public option doesn't do that. I want to actually solve the problem, and the real solution to the problem is universal single-payer health care. In other words, Medicare for all. That heroic man, Dennis Kucinich of Ohio, has been doing all in his power to bring before the consciousness of the American people. That's the solution. But when even something as generally spoken of as a public option are being demanded by as many as 80% of the American people, and still the mugwump Democrats, those blue dogs, refuse to do the bidding of we, the people of the United States, then that doesn't mean we failed. Oh, hell no. That means that we haven't done enough yet. We haven't called enough yet. We haven't emailed enough yet. Have you sat down and taken pen and put it to paper? I think of our pal Diane in New York with her quill and her nice linen stationery. Have you taken pen and applied it to paper and spent the 5 or 10 minutes it'll take to handwrite a letter about health care? You want something you can do this week? Handwrite letters to your elected representatives about S-696, the Appalachian Restoration Act. Handwrite a letter to your member of Congress about H.R. 1310, the Clean Water Protection Act. Do that. And even though it may take a month to get the letter all the way to their office, they'll open it up and they will pay attention to it, and they will, you know, because you put an effort into it. You didn't just pick up the phone, or you didn't just clickety 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 and you sent an email. You sat down and you wrote and you thought and you chose words as you wrote. And I can understand how that would be treated with slightly more gravity. Sometime in the 5 days between Sunday and Saturday of next week, can you do that? And you know what? It doesn't have to be all one issue. You can throw in health care there while you're at it. You can make it comprehensive. And you will be remembered. So, you know, maybe that's worth your effort. I personally think it is. And, of course, as we roll out toward the top of the hour, just because I need a cheap excuse for a bumper, this story. And of course, one of the most loathsome members of the House of Representatives is, beyond a shadow of a doubt, John Boehner. John Boehner of Ohio, who is the House Minority Leader, if the House ever does go back into repiglicking hands, John Boehner, pumpkin face, that orange man, John Boehner will be the Speaker of the House. Yeah, see if that doesn't go through you like a dose of salt. He says he doesn't know a single doctor who supports the health care bill that's in the House. Not one. I have yet to talk to a doctor who is supporting the plan that is moving through the House. And for the American Medical Association to come out in support of this plan, even though I would think a great majority of their doctors are opposed to it, strikes me as inconsistent at best. Well, okay, that's what he says in front of the camera, but he had other things to do recently. Yesterday, in the House of Representatives, Representative Daryl Issa, who's a repig-licking from Southern California down around the San Diego area, and a bit of a crook, he engaged an not unheard of, but certainly not frequently used maneuver. He requested that the House clerk read aloud the 55-page motion to recommit. And doing so took over 40 minutes. Now, why would he do that? Well, there were big doings that they had that the Republicans in the House needed to attend to. What could possibly have been so important? Well, they didn't want to be in the House, the Republicans, because yesterday evening was the big, big, really big 2009 John Boehner Beach Party, honoring John Boehner. Thursday, July 23rd, 2009 at 6 p.m. at the Cantina Marina, 600 Water Street, Southwest, Washington, D.C. Valet parking will be available. For $5,000, you can be a sponsor and get 6 tickets. For $2,500, you can be a host and get 4 tickets. They had to hold up the business of We the People of the United States so they could run down for a little beach booze party for John Boehner. Just kind of takes your breath away, doesn't it? But that's them. That's the Republicans. And that's the first hour. How do you like that? Well, what's on your mind? I got something planned for the top of the next hour, but don't let that slow you down in the least. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. Let me reemphasize, listener-supported. And July has been tough. We certainly do need your help, and I thank people who are kicking in to make sure that August happens. And I'm sorry that we have to sweat from July to August and August to September. But we do. The PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com is easily accessed, as is the snail mail address at the same website, headonradionetwork.com. This is Activist Radio. I'm Bob. It's Friday. Let's have some fun.
His lawyers are calling his tyrants. His the beer is too cold, the daiquiri's too fruitful, no place like home when you're this far.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Nine minutes past the hour. I think I must be slipping in my old age, sitting there talking about the Boner Beach Party. And I really didn't, even realize that, but oh no, no, no. The gang in the chat room, Johnny on the dirty-minded spot. Boner Beach Party. Somebody get Larry Flint on the line. I'm sure he could pull together some of his pals from the adult film industry. They've done several real dandies involving Sarah Palin. Somebody get Larry Flint on the line and send him the image of the invitation. It's up over at thinkprogress.org. Send Larry Flint the image of the invitation.
for John Boehner's beach party. I think that's more than called for. And who knows but what, in no time flat, there will be a delightfully mocking porno flick called Boehner Beach Party behind the curtains at video stores everywhere. Kind of feel sorry for whoever plays Congressman Boehner, however, because they're going to have to wear that god-awful pumpkin-colored orange makeup from head to toe. I once refused. I went to this mass cattle call audition. It was being held in Charlotte, North Carolina, a long time ago. Jesus, I can barely remember. My dinosaur was still small. But it was a mass cattle call audition for basically summer theater around the United States. And if you can imagine, I was offered a role as an Indian. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Tans Under Moon, the albino Indian. No, it was a summer production of The Story of Red Jacket, I think, over in Ohio somewhere. And for like 4 weeks, for 4 weeks straight or something, every night I was going to have to douse from head to hoe. Okay, maybe my dirty mind's getting better all of a sudden. I was going to have to douse myself from head to toe in a makeup color called Navajo Brick. Yeah. And, of course, I would have either a wig or grow my... No, there's not a lot of curly, red-headed Indians out there. No, we'd have to dye the hair jet black, too. And as part of my job in The Story of Red Jacket or whatever it was, I would have to fall off a 40-foot cliff every night. You know, that was one of those little telling moments when I realized that I probably did not have what it took to make it as an actor. Because I knew people who did take that job and did jump off that 40-foot cliff every night. So I've got some degree of sympathy for whomever would have to play Congressman Boehner having to cover up in pumpkin orange grease paint every night. But then he'd have to put the pumpkin orange grease, but this is Front Porch Friday, so my sick little mind can go where it wants to. He'd have to put the pumpkin orange grease, but oh no, let's leave that alone. Jesus, my poor mind. You know, I think I'll just close the mic and play Jimmy Buffett for the rest of the night and maybe not feel so awful. Because there's plenty of, well, awful or just, here, let's have, no, it's not funny. I look at it and I go, Pah! But that's one of those where you do that to keep from starting to bawl. I'm looking at an image right now of this Mary-Kate-up, pinch-faced, pathetic old creature by the name of Representative Virginia Fox. Oh, you do remember Representative Virginia Fox, don't you? Yeah, this is the nasty little racist from North Carolina, you might recall. She did her part. She did her part today to advance this ultra-right-wing, hate-filled, freakish myth that has been making the rounds. No, I'm not talking about the birther nonsense. That's Lou Dobbs' job. And, you know, G. Gordon Liddy's. No, there was a press conference today featuring a whole gaggle of despicable, hate-filled, right-wing, repiglicking, the children of Satan. They call themselves the Ladies of the House GOP.
They put out a press release saying, the ladies of the House GOP will hold a press conference tomorrow morning at the Capitol to highlight the consequences of Democrats' health care legislation. The press conference will also be attended by working mothers who will share personal stories about how the Democrats' health care legislation will hurt women and affect their day-to-day lives.
Really? Were these working mothers also bringing their crystal ball? Because I mean, it's going to take a little. That certainly is engaging in a little bit of prognostication, isn't it?
The Senate Democrats brought in real people today to a press conference on health care to explain why the Democrats' reform plan is necessary. And yesterday, House Dems included doctors and other health care industry workers at a press conference hosted by members who work in health care and in their other lives. Attending the GOP event, Conference Vice Chair Kathy McMorris Rogers, R. Washington, White, Michelle Bachman, R. Minnesota, White, Jeff Judy Biggert, R. Illinois, White, Marsha Blackburn, R. Tennessee, Bleached Blonde, Mary Fallon, R. Oklahoma, White, Virginia Fox, R. North Carolina, White, Kay Granger, R. Texas, White, Lynn Jenkins, R. Kansas, White,
not Arkansas, R. Kansas,
Cynthia Loomis, R. Wyoming, White, Candace Miller, R. Wyoming, R. Michigan, White, Ileana Ross-Leighton, R. Florida, Token, and Gene Schmidt, R. Ohio, mean as a goddamn snake.
So they all showed up. And Virginia Fox really stole the show. I'm not going to sit here and read at you. You deserve to hear it from her own filthy little hate-filled, pasty mouth. Because it's too good not to.
President put out a lot of facts the other day, or put out a lot of numbers that he purports to be facts. They are not facts. We do not have 47 million Americans who don't have health care. There are no Americans who don't have health care.
Got it? Now there's your marching order, right-wing America. Take it and march, damn it, march! There are no Americans who don't have health care. None! Zero! These are not the uninsured you are looking for! Move along!
Million Americans who don't have health care. There are no Americans who don't have health care. Everybody in this country has access to health care.
Oh, cheating on the premise already. There are no Americans who don't have health care. There are no Americans who don't have access to health care. Everybody has access to health care. Really? Really? Everybody? Virginia? Every single American has access to health care? She seems to think that that little placard in the emergency room that says we can't boot your dead ass out on the street until you're either dead or stabilized constitutes health care for all Americans. If I hadn't been warned a little bit by my friends in other faiths, I would wish something terrible on Virginia Fox. But I can't think, I honestly can't think of anything terrible enough to equate with the evil that goes with saying that people who don't have health care don't have health care. But you see, in Virginia Fox's white little world, she doesn't see any people who don't have health care. All the people who work in her office have health care. They've got some of the finest socialized medicine that money can buy. They've certainly got the best socialized medicine that American money can buy. They all have health care.
The people that the people who come to her little garden parties and soirees and so forth, they all have health care. All the lobbyists who pay her off have health care. Therefore, everyone has health care, because if Virginia Fox can't see you, you don't exist.
About 7.5 million Americans who want to purchase health insurance who cannot afford it. We do not need a plan that destroys what is good about health care in this country to give the government control of our lives.
Wow. From Russia's mouth to her ear. That's how we started this program, wasn't it? Wasn't Rush out there saying that Barack Obama won't talk about what's good about American health care because he doesn't love American health care, because he doesn't love America? And then, bang, within a matter of less than a day, there's Virginia Fox saying the same thing. We don't want to destroy what's good about health care in this country. Let's just take you at your word, Virginia Fox. Can we at least fix what's wrong with health care in this country? Can we do that? Are we exceptionally American enough, Virginia, to fix the crap that's broken? Because, see, when your buddies, the people who write you checks, flipping across the TV late night the other night when the children's programming was off, and I caught an episode of Squidbillies where, we're going to get one of them government money checks. Virginia Fox, can we at least correct the problems from those folks, created by those folks who keep writing you them lobbyist money checks? Because, see, we do have people dropping dead in this country, even though they can't, you can't see them. You know, this is all just, this is right-wing repiglick and romper room. You remember romper room when Miss Debbie, was it Miss Debbie? I don't remember. I see Larry, and I see Charlie, and I see Beth. Remember? Well, see, in Virginia Fox's little romper room, it's, and I don't see Jorge, and I don't see Lupe, and I don't see Melisha, and I don't see Jacquez, and I don't see any of you people, because you're too dark. I don't see you. I don't see out there in TV land, if you don't have any insurance, raise your hand. Oh, look, I can't see any of you. You must not exist. But the serious question to, what do you want? She's part of this same weird-ass wing of the Repiglican Party that's weird enough to begin with. She's part of this weird-ass wing of the Repiglican Party, the same wing that thinks that CO2 is good for you because it's natural. That thinks that, well, you know, healthcare's good because the people who provide it keep writing me money checks.
Give the government control of our lives.
Really? Being able to go to the doctor when you're sick is going to give the government control of your life? God, what a moron! Moran.
But of course she isn't. She knows she's lying through her stinking right-wing teeth. She knows she's lying right over the lipstick. Right past the embalmer's putty that passes for her makeup. She knows what the real deal is in America. She knows that corporate health care is killing people. She knows the story of the 17-year-old girl who was killed for want of a liver transplant that was failed by Cigna Health Insurance. She knows, she knows, she knows,
she knows. And I guess it's not that it's not a new thing. It's just that they keep pressing it, hoping that, you know, utilizing the theory of the big lie, if they tell it often enough, somewhere along the way it will turn into truth. I give you George W. Bush from July 2007.
People have access to health care in America. After all, you just go to an emergency room.
I guess. You do. You go to an emergency room, and then you die. That particular scenario plays out 22,000 or more times in America every year. For want of health care in this country, the attacks of September 11th happen 7 times a year. $22,000-plus Americans die each year because they do not have any form of health insurance.
Well, quick, let's do the math. Maybe we can take a bite out of that $45 million, and then there really won't be any uninsured. I mean, if they're that sick, they're not working anyway, so we don't really need them. They're not really Americans.
What a stunning statistic. No, shame on me. It's not a statistic. The Urban Institute produced a report in January 2008, Uninsured and Dying Because of It, updating the Institute of Medicine analysis on the impact of uninsurance on mortality. This is the summary from that report. The absence of health insurance creates a range of consequences, including lower quality of life, increased morbidity and mortality, and higher financial burdens. This paper focuses on just one aspect of this harm, namely greater risk of death, and seeks to illustrate its general order of magnitude. In 2002, the Institute of Medicine estimated that 18,000 Americans died in 2000 because they were uninsured. Since then, the number of uninsured has grown. Based on the IOM's methodology and subsequent Census Bureau estimates of insurance coverage, 137,000 people died. 137,000 people died. That's the entirety of Charleston, West Virginia. That's Beckley, West Virginia, 2, 3, 4 times over. That's the entirety, plus some. Look, 137,000 people. Imagine a football game at the University of Michigan, or the Big Horseshoe at Ohio State University, or Neyland Stadium in Knoxville, Tennessee, or the Penn State Stadium there in State College, PA. All of them seat more than 100,000 people. Imagine if one of those stadiums and a third of another suddenly dropped dead. That is what corporate so-called health care is doing to the people of this country. Did to the people of this country between 2000 and 2006. In 2006, 22,000 people died. That's the biggest part, or more, of the people who live on my side of the river in this county, dead. Much subsequent research has continued to confirm the link between insurance and mortality risk described by IOM. In fact, subsequent studies and analysis suggest that, if anything, the IOM methodology may underestimate the number of deaths that result from a lack of insurance coverage. More broadly, these estimates should be viewed as reasonable indicators of the general magnitude of excess mortality that results from lack of insurance, not as precise body counts. The true number of deaths resulting from uninsurance may be somewhat higher or lower than the estimates in this paper, but that number is surely significant. Pay attention to that that modifier. Excess mortality. This isn't just sick people who died and were dying anyway and happened not to have health insurance. This is a measurement of excess mortality. This is a measure of, let's not put too fine a point on it, this is a measure of senseless, needless death. Deaths that did not have to happen. 22,000 times a year in this country, people die, and families are forever broken and brokenhearted. Not because of a car crash, or because of a slip and a trip and a fall, or because Daddy got the cancer, but for no other reason than that there was no health insurance at all. The report also does not take into account the number of lives ruined among families that do have some sort of corporate avarice-driven health insurance, but are beggared and pauperized by a catastrophic illness. The baseline number is 22,000 American citizens per year. And I imagine that number is, in fact, magnified by the people who are in this country undocumented and don't dare seek medical treatment. And Virginia Fox, with her pearls hanging from her neck, and that smirk like a razor slit in the bottom of her mouth, the bottom of her face, Virginia Fox has the gall, the unmitigated, sickening gall, to say there are no Americans who don't have health care. Everybody in this country has access to health care. And I know that the weird, psychotic, twisted, amoral, ethically, morally bankrupt Republican Party is pushing this theme hard, because I've had my own pharmacist tell me the same thing. And I know from my own experience that being able to go to the emergency room is not the same as having adequate health care. Old John Ashcroft and I, we've got something in common. We both wound up in the hospital with pancreas troubles. Mine caused largely in part because I am a triglyceride factory and a cholesterol factory. And I backed up somehow or another. John Ashcroft went into the hospital. He was immediately hospitalized. He was kept there in excess of a week while he was stabilized. He ultimately had surgery and is apparently feeling fine now. I was in the emergency room for approximately 6 hours. And was sent home and told to try not to eat.
John Ashcroft had the best socialized medicine available in this country. Now, granted, he did have to lay on his back in a hospital bed, half out of his mind, on narcotic pain medications, while members of the Bush administration came and strong-armed him over a domestic spying program. That did not happen to me. I just came home, and Agnes didn't tell me how dangerous the situation was. She simply sat and seethed because she knew what the standard of care was given the diagnosis, and she knew that I had been stabilized and discharged. So anybody who wants to talk about how there aren't... No. One wonders what it would take. Would Virginia Fox be able to see the people if you got a couple of, say, representatives from one of each of the 22,000 families that were shattered last year when a loved one died for want of health insurance? If you got those 22,000 people and stood them all together in front of Virginia Fox, would Virginia Fox be able to see them? Only if they had a corporate money check in their hand. I guarantee it. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
How you doing?
I'm okay. How about you?
I know one thing. I don't like Virginia Fox.
No, I don't like her very good at all.
She can come up with some horrible, horrible stuff. I still say, you know, I think sometime it'd be interesting to ask them if they're under cancer treatment, do they go to the emergency room every time? What about the people who can't drive, you know? What about, you know, what about little children, you know, that are latchkey children, you know? I mean, I think you're correct. I don't think she sees or doesn't think.
She doesn't have ears to hear or eyes to see.
Right. Right. And, you know.
And what do you want to bet she's a Christian?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure she thinks so. But, you know, we've said a lot about what Jesus says about the poor, but, you know, there's a lot in the Old Testament, too.
And generally, you're not supposed to mistreat them.
In fact, the Israelites got in a lot of trouble for doing that.
I do believe you're right. And, you know, in the Quran, it makes abundantly clear that one has a profound duty to give of one's wealth so that one may alleviate the plight of the poor.
Right, right. And, you know, another thing they did, too, was it says not to gather up everything. You know, you leave part of it for the poor to come in, you know.
Yes.
To what they call it, what did they call it, glean the field?
I think you're right. I think you're right, Wanda.
That's how Ruth met Boaz, David's mother.
Yeah.
that wasn't his mother. That was his grandmother, wasn't it?
I think so. It was family, though.
Yeah. She was a descendant of either, you know, and that's how her and Boaz met. Because, you know, she came and lived with her mother-in-law in the land of Israel, see?
Well, and since Virginia Fox says that everybody's got access because everybody can go to the emergency room, what happened to that poor woman that we watched on videotape die on the floor? What happened to her access to the emergency room?
Oh, yeah. Well, I took one of my neighbors, and you never know with a child for sure. All of a sudden, he started breaking out all over. And, you know, you can have an allergic reaction. It can kill you.
Yes, it can.
So she and I, you know, she didn't have any way to go anywhere, so I took her up the emergency room, and we waited for, I bet you, 5 hours. And he started getting better, so we left. But he could have died, you know. You don't know with something like that. When they start like that with an allergic reaction, you know, anybody can die.
Anaphylaxis can kill you in a stone hurry.
Yeah, but tell you what one of my cousins did. He's about my son's age, you know. He's my cousin. He calls me aunt. But anyway, he had seen how his grandmother had been treated in emergency rooms. And he got cut one time really bad. And they told him, he went to the emergency room, and they told him he's going to have to wait quite a while because there's a lot of other people ahead of him. He started hollering and carried on and pitching a fit. They took care of him right away. I said, yep.
Well, let's hear it for the squeaky wheel.
Right.
But the thing is, health care emergencies should not require the person in need of the health care to summon up the last ounce of strength to make himself heard to be treated.
I know it. When I pulled my shoulder out, and I'd waited out in the front for 3.5 hours, and I got in the back. They did lay me down, and I kept waiting. My son came back and said, nobody's seen you yet? And I said, no. So he went to one of the nurses, and they'd already took my x-rays, and the doctor came over. She had one of the nurses looked at it, and she had a doctor to come over, and they took care of me right away then. I don't know how many. That was probably at least 5 or 6 hours. And, I was in agony, and they had to put me to sleep to pull my shoulder back. And
Agnes knocked her knee out of, she dislocated her knee one day.
Oh, yeah.
And they had to knock her out to put it back in place. Because that stuff hurts. Absolutely.
Oh, my shoulder. I also had broken my arm, but that was nothing compared to my shoulder. I mean, I still had the broken arm, but I would have traded that in a minute for that shoulder being pulled out. Ooh, that's something else. But, I like to see them all. And you know what? If they keep on yakety-yak where they do, they may end up, some of them at least, may end up. Remember the history of the Great Depression. There was many of a millionaire that wasn't a millionaire after that. They had, it's like that song, Brother, Can You Spare a Dime?
Mm-hmm.
Based on fact.
Yes, it is. Used to have a railroad, made it run. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And of course, the other thing, Juanita, and it's being mentioned in the chat room, and everybody says hi, is that the right wing used to complain about how all these welfare people, they keep going to the emergency rooms every time they've got a cold or the flu.
Yeah. That,
well, what, as yeah, as, I think it's Sophie that asked, what happened to that argument?
That's a good question to ask. But they'll get on C-SPAN with people calling in, and they'll either take up most of the time with their rambling answers, or they'll get mad, or they'll just kind of not ignore, they'll ignore it or whatever, or you don't know what you're talking about. But that'd be some good questions to ask them.
Well, I'm getting to the point, really, more and more, Juanita, where I'd love to have the chance to ask a Republican congressman if providing health care coverage for all Americans is so prohibitively expensive, then it must surely be too expensive to provide to you.
Absolutely right. And, actually, there was the other day I saw there was a young Republican guy. He had a bill up that if it went through and we had one care or whatever, then the Democrats would have to take it, the Democratic people. He said, I don't want it for myself. I just want it for them. I'm not.
Oh, and, well, you know, that crazy-ass governor down in Texas, Rick Goodhair Perry.
Yeah.
He's threatening to haul out the 10th Amendment. Texas may have to secede from the Union if Rick Goodhair Perry gets his way, if there was some sort of viable, halfway decent health care in this country. Rick Goodhair Perry said, "Oh no, I'll whip out the 10th Amendment. And I'll sue to make sure that Texans can't have health care. He said it's a state's rights issue, and if there ever was an argument for the 10th Amendment and for letting the states find a solution to their problems, this may be at the top of the class. A government-run health care system is financially unstable. It's not the solution.
But he wants some of that money to fix the mansion, don't he?
Absolutely.
Would you know?
I mean, he's not a hypocrite or anything. But you know what? I'm looking forward more and more, Juanita, to watching this Texas governor's race shake out. This may be some of the best. This may be some of the best political comedy to come along in a long time, because you know, Senator Kay Bailey Hutchinson is running against Rick Goodhair Perry.
Yeah.
And back in February, she voted against the stimulus bill.
Uh huh.
You know, she said, "Well, it doesn't actually stimulate anything. Certainly not me." I added the
stimulation dose.
Yeah, well, I added the certainly not me part, but that's because I'm mean. But now she's mad at Rick Goodhair Perry because he turned down the stimulus money that she voted against in the first place. I mean, you know, hypocrisy, thy name is Repiglick. And listen to this. This is just precious, Juanita.
She probably just found out that, you know, the people really want a stimulus, something.
Oh, yeah, suddenly she's a woman of the people. She said, Governor Perry recklessly turned down the federal unemployment insurance money. He never even looked at cutting the ridiculous federal strings attached to that money like I would have done. He didn't even attempt to negotiate a way to relieve employers from a tax increase while helping Texans affected by the economic downturn. But now, because of a purely political decision to turn down UI funding, Texas has had to go into debt and beg the federal government for $650 million loan. And like all loans, this one has to be paid back. And who will pay it back? Mm-hmm. Texas businesses and hardworking taxpayers already facing enormous hardships. It's not conservative. It's irresponsible. You know, she was against it before she was for it.
Oh, yeah. but she's a Republican, so that's all right.
Yeah, it's okay if you're a Republican.
Right, yeah.
You know, that just makes me feel so much better.
I heard a good one on Kyle. You know, he kept talking about the stimulus. We don't need that, you know. Isn't he from Arizona?
John Kyle, Arizona.
Yeah. Anyway.
Crazier than an outhouse rat.
Well, he kept saying that, and they have a new governor that took, you know, because the other one went. What was it? Our national security or whatever. Anyway, and they called her. Someone in the Bush White House called her and said, "Understand that Mr. Kyle says y'all don't need any of the stimulus money. Said if you don't, we can give it to someone who does." Oh no! Don't do that. And I thought that was pretty good. I liked that.
Oh, I just love watching them scurry. Oh, wait, you're going to take away the government money check? Don't take my government money check.
But that geezer, that geezerette or whatever she is, no, that's an insult to all geezers and geezerettes.
Well, but you know what Kate said about that. You said, "What do you call a female geezer?" And Kate says, "You just call us ma'am."
That's pretty good. I forgot what I was going to say about Foxy Loxy.
Yeah.
She shouldn't have a good name like that. I don't like that.
Yeah, and she's double X Fox too.
Yeah,
she's an FOXX Fox.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, I know what I was going to say. You were talking about not seeing people. It's just like slavery. People who had slaves, they didn't see them. They're happy. Listen to them singing. They're happy. They didn't know they were singing songs to each other that explained their misery to one another, and the dumb honors didn't know they were being hoodwinked.
And just got an
I
email.
Love it.
I just got an email in from our pal Cindy in Washington. She said if those 22,000 people were standing in front of Virginia Fox, I bet if they had pitchforks and torches and tar, they'd be seen.
I love that. I mean, I don't know. I don't, if something don't happen in this country soon, if they do what they want to do, I don't know. I might feel like going after some of them myself. I mean, I'm sorry, but, you know, enough is enough.
Yeah, it is. And I'm waiting for the Democrats to figure that out. It ain't rocket science. Enough is enough.
But you were saying somebody said that who should teach the Democrats what Southerners are about, white Southerners are about?
Yeah.
I'm talking about, you know, white Southerners who haven't been mentally liberated.
Yeah, right.
Or soulfully liberated. You know, it's a wonder that any of us ever got out of any of that because it, so much of it's taught in the church and the schools separated and everything. I don't know. Just it's a wonder that any of us ever got out of it because it's a bad place to be. You know, there's a picture of when the little children went to Arkansas school.
Right.
And there's, like, showing these really hateful white people, and there was a young one, young white girl, and she got the most hateful look on her face. Did you know the story behind her?
No.
Well, she was on Oprah, and she said that she was so sorry. She just changed. She had actually changed. And she said some in her family hated her for it. But she said she just really regretted that. And I thought, that's great, you know. Because maybe even the cracker guy, maybe he'll regret some of his actions one day. You never know.
No, you never.
Maybe he will, maybe he won't, but you never know. But she did. She changed. And she said that, oh, she just wished that had never happened. Because hers was the worst one. I mean, she was the had the most hateful look on her face of any of them. And there for posterity, you know.
Forevermore.
Yeah.
Mm-mm-mm. Well, maybe, I don't know. People can and do change. I have to believe that,
yeah.
or else you just you give up and go away.
Yeah.
But about half the time, I think it's
Maybe more than half, you know, the people don't.
Yeah, and it's also a matter of people changing appearances for appearances' sake.
Oh, yeah. But if you're got some ears to hear, you can hear a lot of the subtlety stuff.
Yeah.
You know. And I know my friend, my ex right-wing friend, you know, she used to say things, and then she'd say, but I'm not prejudiced, and I say, you're not?
No.
You really think so? Oh, God.
I know. Juanita, I hope you have yourself a wonderful weekend.
Yeah, you too, and have you announced your new news yet, or... I just got to hear yesterday's program, the first 2 hours today.
as far as the announcement over at Netroots Nation, one of the big things that was announced today was the fact that they're going to have at Netroots Nation in Pittsburgh a debate between Joe Sestak and Arlen Specter. And I am going to be absolutely glued to that room.
I'm not sure I know who Joe.
Well, he's a member of Congress who has vowed to run for the nomination, the Democratic nomination, for senator from Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay.
Because Arlen Specter, you know, he mugwumped over to become a Democrat and then promptly showed his true colors by not supporting the Employee Free Choice Act.
Oh, I thought he was going to change on that.
Not yet he hasn't because the Senate went ahead and gutted it anyway.
I heard him talking the other day, you know, in a committee, and he doesn't sound too good to me. He sounds sick to me. I don't know.
You mean like he's not feeling well or?
Like he's not healthy.
Yeah. Might not be.
Again, he's got the best medical care there is, so.
And he survived, and he survived a couple of, he survived a couple of bouts with cancer, so, you know.
Yeah, I know. He's just getting his hair back, you know, last year or two.
Yeah.
Oh, well. I tell you, I am so disgusted that Baucus, because I saw that thing, you know, where he stood up there and I laughed when those doctors and nurses and all out in the audience got arrested for just getting up and saying something. And he was, looked like he was in great pleasure about it. You know, were they invited?
Oh, yeah. He thinks it's funny when he stymies the will of the people and does the bidding of his corporate masters.
Said, okay, buddy, you've had it. I've had it with you. I don't care what you got, a D behind your name. I mean, I've had it.
That D doesn't mean too much anymore for a lot of people.
No, when he, because those people, because they could tell something. Those are the people that they should listen to. And, you know, because they know what it's about. What little I know about it is because I did work in it. And that's what I know about it. But. Anyway, okay, well, I'll let you go, and you have a good weekend.
I'm going to try. Juanita, you have one, too, and I'll talk to you soon after I, well, not soon, but hopefully we'll talk after I get back from D.C.
Oh, is you going, when are you going?
Oh, I'll be gone all next week.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we're going up to D.C. to work on the Clean Water Protection Act and the Appalachian Restoration Act.
Oh, good.
And hopefully get a couple of steps closer to ending the war on Appalachia.
Well, you know, I thought about that when I was talking about the in the Bible where it says not to glean, I mean, gather all the crops, you know, leave some. And I thought about how they're trying to get everything out of those mountains.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, when I drive down to Charleston, or we drive down to Charleston, we pass a humongous Massey Energy coal dock.
Yeah.
And coal prep plant. And you know what? They have, for a half a mile along the river there, they have mountains of already processed, ready to ship coal that they're just sitting on. Because the market isn't. Yeah, wait. Yeah, because the market isn't good enough to make Don Blankenship as rich as he feels like he needs to be.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Well, I could say something else about that, but I'll wait another day.
I understand. Juanita, you have a good evening and a wonderful week.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
From Florida, that's our pal Juanita. And moving onward, hey, welcome to the program.
You know, I got this little medical condition,
mm-hmm.
and that means I periodically have to go to the emergency room. So I walk in the door carrying a letter from the doctor saying, "Do not allow this woman to wait in the waiting room because she may end up dead." And so, you know, even with that letter, when I walk in, I still end up waiting for hours.
And that's because?
Because it's our wonderful healthcare system. And then I complain to my doctor, and then he calls up and gets somebody fired. Well, not fired, but he calls up and he screams a lot at the hospital staff. It's just the way the whole thing is set up. And in my case, it's a true emergency because when the ammonia level goes up, I'm on my way into a coma. Time to hit the panic button, folks. But even under those cases, no. Oh, no, she doesn't. And this is the condition I have been told to just, before, you know, before I got insured through Medicare, I was literally told, I'm sorry, there's nothing we can do for you.
But now they're able to address it because you finally did get some sort of coverage?
Yeah, providing I can afford copays.
Right.
If it's a case of the ammonia level going, you know, if it's a case of me going into a coma, I don't have a choice. Dawn calls an ambulance, and I wake up on life support.
Dear Lord.
And then we try and figure out what to do.
Merciful so.
Yeah. But I've got health care.
The question is, how good?
Yeah. Don't you just love it? You know, I'm not saying any of this to make anybody feel sorry for me.
No, I understand that.
There are people out there who are a whole lot worse. But they shouldn't have to be a whole lot worse. And that's the point.
Yeah, and I don't know. One of the questions you have to ask, and again, it goes back to that study, Susan, 22,000 excess deaths per year, 22,000 deaths that did not have to happen. Now, what happens to that number if we get meaningful health care reform and that health care reform includes, as it does in Canada, in Britain, in France, Germany, Sweden, you know, name one, preventive care?
Yeah, hallelujah. Well, just to give you an example, before I was put on Medicare, I was close to 3 years behind on mammograms. I couldn't afford it.
No. And so you just roll the dice.
Yeah, I rolled the dice. When we bought our home, we walked in and we paid cash for it because my husband had a court settlement. So we paid cash for our house. We owned it outright. That lasted a couple of years, right up until both my shoulders froze up, and I ended up in the hospital.
And what, you had to go out and get a mortgage to pay the... Oh, Lord. Well, you know, lucky for Virginia Fox, you're invisible to her.
Yeah. I just wish I didn't have to look at her.
She doesn't have to trouble her beautiful mind.
Yes, well...
I guess she gets tonight's Beautiful Mind Award. Last night it was Marsha Blackburn from Tennessee. She got the Beautiful Mind Award because, if you recall, she didn't want America just crying emergency with every Katrina.
Yeah, I know. I got that one, too.
And tonight, Virginia Fox gets the Babs Bush Pearl Clutching Beautiful Mind Award for being unable to see millions upon millions of uninsured Americans.
As we die. I'd like to have my husband get a hearing aid. His hearing was damaged in World War II, but since the records burned up, there's no record of his hearing being, of him being in the battle that damaged his hearing. So he can't get.
Was that military records fire at the center in St. Louis?
Yeah. It is used so profoundly often by the U.S. government to deny anything and everything.
You know, I went a few years back, I went on a little crusade to try to discover a little bit of the history of how my father's brother, my uncle, died. And I hit that like a brick wall. Oh, we're sorry. There's no records of his service.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it wasn't a situation where, you know, benefits or something like that were dependent upon it. It was just me wanting to know a little bit of my uncle's history. Because we've got his Purple Heart. And every morning when I step out of the bedroom, the first thing I see is his Purple Heart certificate, signed by FDR.
Yeah.
And his portrait hangs on our wall. And he is referred to, you know, I never met him, certainly my children didn't, but he is referred to as a member of the family as Uncle Fred.
But to the government, he no longer exists.
But to the government, he's non-existent. Exactly.
Yep.
You know, you'd think that there would be some effort to try to recreate that. But then again, the idea that, my God, it's the federal government and they put all their eggs in one basket? Oosh.
Well, of course. Personally, I think a lot of these...
But then again, if nothing's...
I don't think all those records went up in that fire. I think that just makes a really good excuse.
Yeah, they didn't go up in that fire, but they went up in that fire, Susan, if you know what I mean.
Exactly. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
A few million dollars of the federal of potential federal budget liability went up in that fire.
Exactly. How many hearing aids?
But why are we surprised? I mean, during the 8 long tortured nightmare years of the Bush administration, how many times did we have stories about the fact that, you know, in 2004, 5, 6, 7, 8, that the Bush administration, well, we can't turn over those illegal emails or because we lost them.
Yeah.
And I remember having discussions on the horn section and on this show about the fact that even we back up our data.
Yep.
But not the federal government. And, of course, that fire...
The term is that plausible deniability.
Well, and one more thing, and this is just my sublimely paranoid moment for the evening, Susan. That fire was when? 1973, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that.
And that would be the what administration?
The Reagan.
No, 1973.
No. 73? Oh, goodness. Tricky Dicky.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not paranoid or anything.
No.
Just saying.
But
right.
You and me get fitted for identical straitjackets then.
Yeah, I want an Armani one.
Yeah.
Because I'm an elitist snob, you know.
Yeah, you and me both. Well, anyway, have fun in D.C. and...
I wish there was going to be fun in D.C., but it's going to be a lot of work.
Well, yeah, I know that. But go by and, okay, my Congressman Wu is on board with 1310.
Mm-hmm. And I assume that who is not?
Has not. Merkley so far has not said that he is on board with 696. I keep yapping at them. But they haven't told me yet that he's on board with it.
Susan, do you have a scanner?
Yes.
Can you handwrite a letter to Senator Merkley?
Of course.
I'm birthing an idea here.
Oh, I think I get it.
If you can handwrite, because really the mails are tragically slow between anywhere and Capitol Hill because of the right-wing anthrax attack of some years back.
Uh-huh.
If you can handwrite a letter to Senator Merkley and you can scan it and send me the scan as an email attachment...
And then you print it out.
I give you my word, I will print it out, and I will hand-carry it to Senator Merkley's office. If you want to do this, is Senator Wyden on board?
That's a little iffy.
Write him one, too. And I mean by write, I don't mean type. I mean
pen and ink and paper and your own handwriting and your signature.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Addresses, you know, do it like you were taught to do in grammar school.
Oh, God, my handwriting is really bad.
You know what? That will say something to them in its own right. Because, you know, if you have a hard time doing it and you still took the time to do it, that means it matters. And that gives me another talking point in his office.
And everybody else who has somebody who is not on board can do the same thing.
And even if your senator is on board, you can still do it, and I will hand carry it.
Okay, in that case, I'll give you one for Wu too.
And for the ones who've signed on, the message is thank you for signing on. Please, please pressure your colleagues to make this happen.
Yeah, and my calls to the delegation, like to Merkley and Wu, who are Merkley's for definitely for single payer healthcare, and Wu is too. What I do when I call them, and I call them every day. I call them and I say, "This is my daily call, so that you can truthfully tell the lobbyists I am still getting calls demanding single payer healthcare."
Good. And I'm so glad, Susan, that you helped me, you helped birth this idea. Everybody within the sound of my voice, you have between now and Sunday night, late Sunday night, because by then I'll be packed.
No problem.
You have to handwrite a letter, scan it into your machine, email it to me, bobkincaid@gmail.com. Addressed to your senators and your member of Congress. Do a little homework. Find out if they've signed on to the acts as they are. If they have, write a letter thanking them and encouraging them to encourage their colleagues to do the same. If they haven't, impress upon them the absolute necessity of getting these bills passed. I would love nothing better than to have a few hundred of these letters under my arm when I walk in to these office buildings in D.C. and go and deliver each and every one of them. And as God is my witness, as dog is my witness, as the flying spaghetti monster is my witness, as nothing is my witness, as the universe is my witness, I will hand carry them. I'll let Margie or Ferg or Doodle deliver them.
The Kincaid family is the mailman.
Well, you know, my mother, rest her soul, was an assistant postmistress of Victor, West Virginia, once upon a time. So this is kind of fitting. Susan, this is a magnificent idea.
I'll get right on it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Love to the family.
I think we've got a busy weekend ahead.
You and me both.
Our love to Donald.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. Again, I am loath to ask or tell you to do anything because I know how precious your time is, and you already spend 3 hours an evening sharing it with us. But this is an opportunity to make something very real happen. Because if I can walk into an office with a letter from a constituent from the individual district or the individual state, and I say, I come bearing tidings from, and I will hand them the scan of that handwritten note, and they will be hard-pressed to ignore it. If you are represented by Republicans, do not give up on that account. Write it anyway. Scan it in. Email it to me. Is that worth doing? I love the way that we working together process information and come up with ideas. Can we do this? I'm willing to do this. Are you?
This isn't me telling you what to do. I'm telling you that I am willing to do this if you are willing to do that. I like this. I like this a lot. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening. This is Larry.
Hey, Larry. How are you?
Okay. Hey, I just heard that what I've done in the past is to write a letter, print it out, sign it, flip it back over on the scanner, and fax it to my senator. And I've gotten responses that way, but unfortunately they're not really very coherent.
Well, I think this is particularly useful, Larry, because this way there will be a person in front of them that they have to deal with.
Yeah, that might be, although, you know, you can hand him as many letters as you want, but, that. And...
Oh, granted, I'm not handing him money.
Right, right. That's the only thing I've found that really perks up their interest.
But next year is an election year, especially for members of the House.
Yeah, but, you know, they can get enough votes, at least where I live, just by their name, you know. You go out there and put up enough signs around the polling place with your name on it, and people will vote for you.
Probably sadly true.
You know, I'm getting really, really cynical these days because my senator, I've got two of them, but one of them I don't even count. It's no use even trying. And the other one, I thought the guy was smart when I moved here. Bill Nelson says astronaut. Oh, that ought to be a smart guy.
Yeah.
But then when I would listen to what he had to say, it appeared that he was a candidate for the short bus.
But he's a handsome devil, isn't he?
Yeah, and I've determined that he was an astronaut, a senatorial astronaut, which means he got a ride by virtue of being a senator.
Not surprised. But at least he's not orange from the tanning bed. He's naturally tanned.
Right, not a whole lot upstairs, as far as I can tell.
I'm not going to argue with you. I mean, he's really, really blue doggy.
Oh yeah, he's blue dog, and I haven't figured out the blue dog disease, whatever it is.
Apparently it's caused by exposure to corporate cash.
Yeah, that's one big factor, and I've just decided that these people don't give a damn about us unless we have money. And even when I've given money to politicians, it's never been enough to have any effect.
No, it doesn't constitute walking around money, Larry. I mean, it just doesn't.
Yeah, well, you know, I can't buy a yacht or something. Have you noticed that these people that go into the Congress somehow always come out wealthy?
Yeah. Ethics come in, but they don't come out. It's kind of like the ethics version of the Roach Motel.
There are a few exceptions. I think probably Kucinich, Sanders, and damn few others.
There are, and they at least provide an example that others can follow. You know, one of the people I'm going to be visiting is a freshman congressman from the 5th District of Alabama, where I grew up. His name is Parker Griffith.
Parker, oh yeah. Yeah, I watched the online the debate between him and his opponent. I'm glad he beat the opponent because the opponent was a lunatic.
Oh, he was a bizarre, evangelical, fundamentalist member of the religion industry, without a doubt.
Yeah, he's been trying to get into office for years and years. And it was just not possible for him, I guess, in Huntsville, because there are a few people with some sense there. I'm not sure how far that district.
Yeah, that district takes in basically northwest and north central Alabama. Colbert and Lauderdale County, Limestone County, Madison County, I know, probably Franklin County, Lawrence County, and maybe as far over as Jackson. See, my ninth grade Alabama history and civics actually did stick.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, our former guy there was Bud Kramer.
Right.
Another Blue Dog. I don't know what...
Yeah, he was basically the member of the House from NASA.
Yeah. Yeah, that was his thing. But on any other issues, social issues, he was Blue Dog as... You know,
and several years back, I graduated high school with one 5th District Congressman's daughter. His name was Flippo. Flippo.
Oh, yeah.
And he wasn't a bad guy.
Right. It was really surprising.
Ronnie Flippo.
Yeah, when he won, we didn't know where in the heck he came from because, you know, nobody knew anything about him.
Right, and Florence is kind of like Brigadoon. You can't get there by accident.
Yeah, well, I had a friend who lived out there for a while, and it was pretty grim.
It was really tough during the early 80s. Of course, I got an email from our buddy David in South Carolina last night toward the end of the program. I would dearly love to be in Florence tonight, the second night of a two-night stand at the old Shoals Theater on the corner of Tom Bigby and Mobile Street, a rehabilitated Art Deco structure where I watched many a Disney movie as a child, is playing host this evening to the Drive-By Truckers, playing in their hometown for the first time in eons.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll bet that house will be rocking.
Yeah, a lot of music and recording stuff going on there in the Shoals.
Very much so. And, in fact, it was kind of sad to mark the passing of one of the original greats from the Muscle Shoals music movement. Barry Beckett passed away the last couple of weeks. And I was sad to read that. But, yeah, what a heritage that is. And, of course, that's a musical heritage that extends all the way back to W.C. Handy.
Yeah. Yeah, there's... Somebody said that, you know, Alabama, if they could free themselves from some things, they would be the most progressive state in the South. But they're...
But those chains, those fetters are very, very strongly forged.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, it all turned turtle with Ronald Reagan. And to this day, I still don't understand the so-called Reagan Democrat or the Reagan Revolution. I don't understand what it is about a washed-up, greasy old B-movie actor with a bad dye job that could turn an entire region on its ear.
Well, yeah, I've often said that those people in Alabama, they're fairly down-to-earth, basic people who really are kind of afraid of city slickers and such, and they really are afraid of anybody they think is smarter than they are. So to get elected to office, you have to be dumber than half the people.
Or appear to be.
Yeah. Yeah, Hal Heflin had it down just fantastic.
Oh, rock solid to a science.
You could listen to him, you know, on the radio when he was back home and when he was on C-SPAN. And they were different people.
Oh, as a young DJ, I played many a Saturday morning Hal Heflin senatorial report.
Yeah.
Always came on cassettes, and as soon as they were done, they were mine, and they were quickly magnetized and covered up with things like, you know, AC/DC, the Beatles, Rolling Stones. What they came in handy. They were crappy, and they were disposable, but they were free.
Yeah, but you hear him on C-SPAN, and he would, you could tell he was a smart guy.
Oh, gosh, yes.
And you know, I still maintain that George Wallace kind of got a bad rap. You know, I was there when he was governor, and things didn't go badly. And I think maybe his stand in the schoolhouse may have been the best he could do at the time, was to stand there and hand it to the federal government.
And you know the other thing, Howell Heflin, did you ever notice the likeness between him and Mr. Haney on Green Acres?
Yeah.
Well, Pat Buttram, the guy who played Mr. Haney on Green Acres, came from not too far from where Howell Heflin came from. I always thought that Howell was kind of halfway channeling Mr. Haney.
Yeah, somebody pointed out to me that the guy that played Goober on Andy Griffith was from Hazel Green, which is north of Huntsville.
And yeah, and in fact, he is. You're talking about George Lindsay. He's the founder of the George Lindsay Film Festival at the University of North Alabama in Florence.
Oh. Okay.
And that is a fine time. That's a lot of fun to go to. It happens, I think, in March. Happens in March or April in Alabama, and there's a lot of great, great little films that get shown there. So you know, I've got quite a little. I loved the early black and white Andy Griffiths, and of course Jim Nabors is an Alabamian. George Lindsay, graduate of the University of North Alabama, and then of course Don Knotts is a West Virginian.
Oh, okay.
So lots of legitimate redneckery or hillbilliness, and of course you know Andy Griffith himself is a North Carolinian.
Well, you know there is hope, you know, for you, Bob. I heard recently that Roy Moore is going to make another run.
Oh, run, Roy, run! preferably with that Ten Commandments stone hanging from your ugly little fascist neck. Exactly. Well, Larry, it's awfully good to hear from you. If you want to write one of those letters and scan it and shoot it over to me, I give you my word. I will see that it goes to Mel Martinez and Ben Nelson and whoever your Congress critter is.
Okay. And the subject is the healthcare thing.
No. We're talking Appalachian Restoration Act, and that's the Senate side, and Clean Water Protection Act. Although, if you want to make it a sort of an omnibus letter, that's cool too.
Okay. Yeah. That's mountaintop removal is not a big issue down here.
Well, but we have to make it one because there is a lot of mountaintop removal coal that's burned in Florida.
That's right, and yeah, we get all the mercury and stuff.
Exactly, and you get the fly ash has to be taken somewhere too.
That's probably in my cinder block house.
It could very well be, and just a reminder: if you go to ilovemountains.org, right there on the main page, there's a little widget you can put your zip code into, and it will give you direct. It will show the direct connection between your power company and mountaintop removal.
Okay.
And yeah, and you know that's a handy little tool for elected representatives too.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how to unwind the energy thing. You know, every source of energy has its downsides or its limitations. And I think it comes down to we're going to have to use less, or at least waste less.
Conservation has to be part of it. But also rethinking. You know, look, I'm not the science guy to be talking to about this, but I have talked to people who are, and the amount of energy. You know, we burn the coal to get the electricity. You know, in steam plants and so forth. But of the electricity that we send out to the grid, what, as much as half of it is lost in transit? It just bleeds away.
Yeah.
And that's smart? How?
Yeah, and of course, if we all start using electric cars, well, we'll need a lot more of that.
You know, that's not necessarily so, Larry.
Really?
Because what happens is most people, as far as like a plug-in hybrid is concerned, most people plug their cars in at night when there's not much stress on the grid anyway.
Yeah, but the energy usage goes from petroleum to whatever the power plant is burning. And they're still going to have to burn more of it to make the energy.
Well, the energy does have to be created. But if you'll notice, I don't know if you've seen the new Prius ads that are out. They've got the next generation of Prius out now, and the darn thing's got solar cells on it.
that's great.
And in Florida, like, that's a problem?
Yeah. Well, I think I figured out once that for voltaics, I would have to cover my whole lot to power my usage.
Well, that also may have changed because of advances in the technology.
Yeah.
Because and that's one of the things that desperately needs to be, you know, we don't need $60 billion in carbon capture and storage coal welfare, but a few billion dollars thrown into advancing photovoltaic technology, that would be nice.
Right. We also have to look at the battery technology.
Absolutely.
Everybody talks about the lithium batteries, but do you know where lithium comes from? I don't.
It's a mineral.
Yeah, but, you know, is there enough of it?
Well, you know, that's one of the things that Van Jones pointed out when I was listening to him last February at PowerShift. He said, we don't have to just change our consumption patterns, and we don't just have to change where we get the energy from. We have to change the way we think, and this was the direct quote, or else the wars we fight in the future will be wars fought by solar-powered tanks over the places that have the lithium in the ground.
Yeah. Yeah, and that goes for a number of exotic materials. I've heard it questioned as to whether there's enough uranium if we go nuclear. Is there enough uranium? I've heard that we're actually running right now on decommissioned nuclear weapons.
That's possible. But the other thing is that, and I'm no fan of nuclear. I don't accept that as a viable alternative. However, I've had extensive conversations that I don't understand, see how I am, with the resident certified, no two ways about it, sure enough, genius of the horn, Ben Birch, who says there's a way to do smart nuclear. And he's certainly worth listening to on the issue. But, you know, plain old-fashioned, nasty, you know, Three Mile Island, Chernobyl-style fission reactors, that's no solution. That's not even a temporary solution.
No, not with the waste problem. There are ways, I think, that they say they can produce less waste or less destructive waste.
By the way, you were talking about where lithium comes from, and the question's also being asked in the chat room. I have been told back when I was a cigar snob, which I can no longer afford to be, that one of the things that makes Cuban cigars so special is that there is lithium in the soil of the Vuelta Abajo, where so much of the Cuban tobacco comes from, and Cuban cigars have the effect that they have because of the lithium in the soil that's transferred into the tobacco leaf.
Oh, so you won't be schizophrenic if you just smoke Cuban.
Or bummed out. Of course, how a fella could be bummed out with a nice Romeo y Julieta or maybe a Monte Cristo number 2 or Monte Cristo number 7 or whatever in his hand and a little snifter of brandy in the other, you know, no bummed out. Me happy.
Yeah. Yeah, well.
Or even a good Cuban Añejo rum would be nice.
Yeah.
But, Larry, good talking to you, and I hope we will talk soon. And I'll be looking for an email.
Okay, I'll see if I can get the time to do that.
All right, you take care and have a great weekend.
Okay, bye.
Bye now. So, good friend Larry calling from Florida. And just to repeat the offer, I'm going right to the phones. Don't run away. I was asked in the chat room to please repeat the bills that we're talking about.
We are talking about H.R. 1310, H.R. 1310, the Appalachian, no. H.R. 1310, the Clean Water Protection Act. The Clean Water Protection Act. And then S, as in Senate, 696, the Appalachian Restoration Act. Okay, H.R. 1310, Clean Water Protection Act. S-696, Appalachian Restoration Act. Okay? Okay. And just to repeat the offer, if you handwrite a letter about this directed to your senators and your member of Congress, you scan them in as individual files, you email them to me as attachments, bobkincaid@gmail.com, I will print them off, and I will hand-carry them to Washington, D.C., next week, and I will make sure that they go to the individual offices of the individual senators and members of Congress involved. You have my word. And on we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Listen, I guess Obama forgot where the hell he was. You know? I was like, damn, you know, he thought he would go black for a second.
No.
Now he had to backtrack. I was like, God damn it, if he didn't backtrack. And I'm thinking, my God, this man's a president and he's still.
And there's Rush Limbaugh. My friends, he's an angry black man with a chip on his shoulder.
No, it was too, it's just, the whole thing is just so unbelievable. And the way, you know, I mean, he was definitely a field Negro for a minute, but he's back in the house.
Right, God, Sandra.
And I'm like, oh well, you know, he has to be president, not me. But I was just like, damn.
You know what? You're going to get me in trouble one of these days. I don't know how to avoid it except for maybe to you for you to scan in your official Black American credentials so we can post them on the website.
Oh, okay, yes. Well, no. For the listening people, I am a Negro. Does that cover it?
Okay. We're square now.
No, but.
But because see, you got to understand, if you're Bill Bennett and you're so white, you glow in the dark, and you say some of the hateful, evil crap that he says,
yeah,
you get away with it. But I'm not a right wing Republican. They will crucify my white ass over this.
I know, but look at I can only look at things the way I'm sorry. What he first stepped up saying, you know what, you need to stop arresting black folks. Nothing wrong with that. Next day, it's some other gibberish, and he's talking to the cracker. I'm like, you called him up?
Well, but you know, he did give mouth-to-mouth resuscitation to that black man on the Celtics who was dying.
No, do you know this fool teaches racial profiling classes? Yes, this officer teaches other officers about racial profiling. I just about busted my head, almost exploded on that one.
As in how to do it or how not to.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, well, okay. And then, you know, not a good look for them to have a few Negroes and some women behind them and just have Whitey speak for them. That wasn't very smart. You know, the press conference?
Yeah. It's just like that pool in Philadelphia, Sandra. They were trying to change the complexion of the press conference.
You know, oh lordy, lord, the whole thing is just, you know what I mean? You know, Obama's getting profiled anyway with this birther stuff. That's straight up profiling on a level. I have to say, you know, as just watching a watcher of events. This shit is funny day out and day in, this presidency. I have some serious shit going on, I know, but you got to admit, it is a theater of the absurd. It really is.
Oh, it is. I mean, it wasn't long before airtime before I, you know my sick fascination with going to CNN.com.
Okay, yep.
Link, Cafferty, should Obama apologize on Gates? What?
Oh, what?
What? Should Obama, and you know, Jack Cafferty, he's all curmudgeonly and,
Right. That's the head. Should he apologize? Let's see. What's he say? The Cambridge cops want an apology from the President of the United States for saying the police acted stupidly in the arrest of Harvard professor Henry Louis Gates Jr. They didn't get one today, but they got something. The president made a surprise appearance in the White House briefing room today, saying he spoke with the arresting officer and that he didn't mean to malign the police department, but he stopped short of apologizing.
No, he has to, I don't know what he has to do, resign over it, I think. I think that's what will be satisfactory.
Yes, yes. And then he has to admit that the birth certificate is a forgery and he has to move to Indonesia.
Right.
Or Kenya. Or Kenya.
Good night. The whole thing is just so over the top. You know, and of course, it's covering issues that we really care about, like health care. Because I don't give a F. It's one, you know, Gates is just another elite. Okay, whatever. You know, if he was some black person in Texas, we wouldn't be hearing about it. And he'll just be still in jail.
Probably. Well, okay, see, you just tapped something there, Sandra.
So I can't get too worked up, anyway.
No, because, you know, because that's the way my little mind works.
Well, you know.
Because, you know, I don't think there was anything wrong with calling out the story. But by the same token, the thing that goes through my mind is, how many thousand times did that happen in the United States that at the same time it was happening to Henry Louis Gates?
Well, and Gates, you know, you have to remember that Gates is not, I don't mean to malign the man, but he's not so much involved with civil rights. He's more of a sort of admirer of blackness, if you know what I mean. That's his gig. He chronicles black history, you know, black attitudes, just that sort of stuff. You'll see his programs. He has like the sort of how did W.D. Du Bois call him? The talented Pence. He's all about that.
Okay. Okay. I know what you're. So he sort of sits at a distance and admires the people who are in the trenches doing the work and getting the snot beat out of them.
Well, yeah, and also he chronicles and does a good job of getting the history of just black culture. You know, it's not like W. Du Bois, who actually was pretty revolutionary. But his time required that, you know what I mean? So when they compare, when they talk about Gates in the same conversation, it makes me cringe, you know. And I'm like, no, he's just another, you know, elite.
Well, it reminds me, sort of, he's carrying on in the footsteps of Carter Woodson. You know, the father of what came to be known as Black History Month. I know about Carter Woodson because he came up out of the coal fields of Fayette County, West Virginia.
Yeah. But it's just sort of, you know how you have Cornel West, who's also one of those people who are into the talented tenth. But Cornel West is a little bit more radical.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, he will from time to time call BS.
Right. But Gates isn't so, no, he's more of a, I wish I can't even come up with the right way of describing him because I'm not putting him down. It's just
No. He's gently deterrorizing white America of black folks.
Yeah, and he's sort of bringing out what, you know, is lost in predominantly sort of white historical chronicling. We don't get. Yeah, and that's what he does. But he probably was as shocked as anybody else to be arrested, basically, if you understand what I mean by that.
Well, yeah, and he was wore out. What, he'd just come back from a trip? I mean, the whole thing just stinks.
No, and it's more, and there's an element of, do you know who I am, to it, and which, you know, fair enough. But for the cop to be talking about himself in a third person and saying he ain't going to apologize, I'm like, yikes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and this just in, ELO just shot me this, and this is I could not make this up. This is an honest to God Associated Press headline, Sandra. Obama rushes to quell racial uproar he helped fire.
See, that's what I'm talking about. You know, it's like when he was up on a podium, all black, talking about stupid cops. White people are like, oh, my God, you know what I mean? So he has to, you know, reel it in.
Well, yeah, and when Rush Limbaugh's out there saying he's got a chip on his shoulder.
You know, that chip on his shoulder is white folks. Everybody, every pasty-faced, doughy white guy listening to Rush say that knows that, especially folks down south, knows that what Rush means is uppity. You know?
Right. These white people can't deal with this black person as president. I mean, that's what the underlying problem is. That's where this whole birth is. They just cannot fathom a black man being president. So he has to be something else, not American. Let's, you know,
right.
Literally.
And you know what? But you know what? With this whole thing, there's also a layer underneath, Sandra, if I may dare suggest this. Throughout, and it's a function of, I guess, soft bigotry, if there is such a thing. Throughout white America's history, there has been an ongoing and consistent effort to delegitimize any, and I don't care what the emotion is, but any emotional response had by a dark-skinned person has been delegitimized. For instance, sexually speaking, you know, it's, you know, they're going to get to white women.
Right.
Or intellectually, well, you know, they didn't really have those grades. You know, how did he get into, he only got into college because... And what, you know, what, or, dear Lord God, music, okay? You know, Elvis became Elvis by whitening up what was already going on musically inside the black community and was referred to at the time as race music.
Race music, yeah, right.
Okay? And that was, you know, that was a delegitimization.
There is that
element in this as well, because Henry Louis Gates was tired and pissed off. But you know what? He can't be tired and pissed off.
Not even in his own house.
No, not even in his own house.
That's the thing that's really stunning to me in all this. It's like, come on. You know, all he did, if you ask for a cop for his badge and number and you're black, it's disorderly conduct.
Or, yeah, obstructing an officer in the legitimate, yeah.
You know, and in his house, too. I mean, yeah, the whole thing was out of control. But to me, I can't be hearing that it's, both parties was wrong. I'm like, no, the dude was in his house. Once he showed the ID, that should have been the end of it.
Yeah.
Right?
Right, exactly. But we live in an America where that is not the end of it. And to be fair, to be absolutely fair, It is not necessarily always race driven, because we have a Supreme Court decision that I mentioned in the last couple of shows that says if the cops ask you for your ID, or if they ask you to tell them your name, you no longer have the right in this country to refuse to answer them. The Supreme Court said that years ago now.
Right. No. Okay, well, he complied, though. That's the thing.
Yeah, right. But that's where the racial aspect comes in. He complied, but by virtue of the color of his skin, his compliance was not sufficient, because it was not in its origins sufficiently obsequious.
No, but how they're sort of exploding this into an attack on all the good law enforcement in this country is just over the top, you know. Obama's attacking the cops, and by virtue of him being black, you know what I mean? It's
right, right. Let's see. Obama attacks cops. Cops love Jesus. Therefore, Obama attacks Jesus. I mean, that's the way the right wing operates. You take an isolated situation, and you magnify it into a broad generalization. And that's what's happened here.
Yeah, I mean, and that Rush going so far as, you know, saying that, you know, Obama is attacking whites. I mean, I don't understand how Rush can stay on the radio. It's beyond, I mean, it's just, they took off that idiot, who was that guy who called them girls nappy-headed?
Oh, Imus, yeah.
And that's just nothing compared to this.
But see, Rush gets away with it because everybody expects Rush to do that. What caught Imus, Sandra, was the fact that even though he was outrageous and even though he was a so-called shock jock, there was a line established for Imus because he was not an established right-wing commentator. If you are an established right-wing commentator, you can, like G. Gordon Liddy, say that, oh, he was born in a hospital in Mombasa. Or
right. Or you can say that that poor soldier should be executed.
Right. Or you can do as Rush did some years back and say, call me back when you get that bone out of your nose.
Right. And he continues, yeah.
Because by engaging in that racially insensitive outrageousness, he establishes a baseline continuum within the right-wing community and within the broadcast community that says, well, he's got a history of this, this is what he does. And frankly, I think Rush Limbaugh could use the N-word and still not be touched.
Yeah, no, I believe that. I agree with you on that. It's just sort of, he is so disgusting. God, you know? He can't be on this world for much longer. Look at him. Come on.
But
know,
Sandra,
I
was going to say, but deeper than that, understand that the fact that they do establish that tolerance base for him, understand what that means. That of the people he's talking to, they're agreeing, and they're thinking he's right. And not only that, his advertisers agree with him. And not only that, his corporate structure agrees with him. That gives you a broader picture of the vastness of the ugly, filthy undercurrent of racial hate that permeates this nation.
Well, and I don't have seen anything but the president backtracking on an issue to tell me that. You know, I was joking, but in all seriousness, that's amazing that he felt the need to step out, not even a spokesperson, but himself to come out and you know what I mean?
Some of that I would also submit to you is not necessarily racial in nature. It's being a Democrat in nature. Sandra, I'm not kidding. We are the party that apologizes. Do you remember Dick Durbin? Now, it don't get much whiter than Dick Durbin.
And he said the Hitler thing?
And he said on the floor that if you saw stories coming out of Guantanamo and you did not know that they were being perpetrated by Americans, that you would swear it was something out of Stalin's Russia or Hitler's Germany. And they went at him hammer and tongs for days, weeks, months, until he tucked his tail between his legs, marched onto the floor of the Senate, and apologized for something that was absolutely the truth. He ain't black. So.
No, I remember that, and I was upset about that, too. I'm like, what the, you know, listen, all of it is just really over the top, but I just thought I'd have to.
Well, I don't know what I'm going to do being off the air all next week. It's going to grate on me.
Well, especially if it's going to be continuing, it seemed to be blowing up. What August? That's usually vacation time, so maybe you'll get a reprieve.
Mercy, you know, I was kind of mad that Congress was going to go on vacation during August, but now I'm beginning to look forward to it. Maybe it's not them getting so much of a break as it is us.
Well, you know, I don't know. Listen, I'll call it a night, but have a safe trip.
Well, thank you, Sandra, and we will talk soon. I'll be
okay,
busting. By the time I get back behind the microphone, I'll be busting.
Oh, for sure. Okay.
Later. Bye now. And a few minutes left in the program. Let's try to wedge in one more call. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, is that me?
That is you.
Hey, Bob, it's Renee Louise.
Well, hey, Renee Louise. How are you, dear?
Hey, just trying to keep my head above water. That's why you haven't heard from me. And I just happened to, I've been trying to stay in touch with you on the archives when I can. But I just happened to, and lately, too, I had my connection problems, but I just came in, and I came in on the very tail end of you speaking with Susan and about the letters. And I had to call and just put people trying, and I'm standing with you. First of all, I have to say I don't know if I have a scanner. My neighbor just gave me their printer, and if it has it and if I can figure it out, I will get that letter off to you, because this is basically what I was trying to do with you when last we talked. And I think it is a wonderful and a beautiful idea, and we have to throw our pessimism out the window. This is the problem. We have to stand in. And I have seen it work with email campaigns, not even with handwritten letters. This is about bringing our numbers together. You're not just having a single handwritten letter being delivered. If all of us pull together and stand with you, stand up and stand with you, like you are there for us day in and day out to let us vent And thank God we have that, where if we need to, we can call in and vent to you, and we have to appreciate that. Now we have a moment to stand with you. It doesn't matter, really, what the end result is. We have a moment to stand with you and support you, and that is what is important. That is supposedly what an American is. So if anybody out there who has a scanner, I hope they will stand with you, too. But I had to take this moment to call you. The last thing I should be is on the phone, and I'm probably going to get in trouble, but it's so important. And I just wanted to say a beautiful idea to have been birthed, because this is exactly what I was talking with you about when last we spoke, and I think it's brilliant. And I just had to call in and put my support behind you.
Well, I'm so glad that you did, Renee Louise, and I've already gotten a couple of emails saying, you know, count me in.
Great.
I hope a lot more people, and of course there are a lot of people who haven't heard this yet because they listen by podcast.
Right. Yeah, that's me normally. Hello?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay. Yeah, that's me. That's me lately. You know, I haven't been able to, and I'm still behind on some of the archives and stuff, or my connections have been going out when I can. And it's like, but again, right back to this, and I'm so glad you restated the house numbers and everything as well. I have to do a little more research. This, I'm pretty sure, Feinstein I'm not positive on, but I think my other two are okay. That was important to get out there, too. I wanted to make sure you were going to restate that as well. But I think, and you talk about this being activism radio. Well, yeah, well, let's really put that into action. The only reason, I also stopped calling you because I felt like I was pestering you. And
no, you weren't pestering me.
You know, and the people listening, but, you know, that's the problem. We aren't, we're getting defeated too easily. We the people have to grow a backbone. If we want those we're sending to grow a backbone, if we want to get rid of everything that's wrong with the system. I mean, we've got a lot of work to do.
We do indeed.
And again, the preamble of the Constitution states, we the people do ordain and establish. So we've got to stop relinquishing our control and our responsibility. And I have seen, as I was saying before, I have seen this be effective with veterans issues, with the children's health insurance, through email campaigns, not even through personal handwritten letters, as you are speaking of, and as you have also spoken of how that impacts our representatives and our senators.
That's what I'm told, yes.
Right, and I've heard it as well from other sources besides you. I've heard it out of the senators' mouths as well and the representatives' mouths as well, that somebody's taken the time to do that. But if you can take them and in a gathered number, represent them, and as you said, stand there and physically put it in front of them, I've seen it work on the environmental issues, the children's health care, veterans' issues, and this is just with emailing it's worked. Because I've been involved in it, and then I've seen the responses when it's happened and it's worked, and I've seen the thank yous that have come through. It just worked with Dennis Kucinich on getting his amendment into the health care for each state to be allowed to initiate their own single payer if they so want. It was through him. He emailed out to everybody that he needed us to call in or write in and call in to the senators right then and there to support his amendment and get the – and it worked. He got it stated. So anybody who has that pessimism, I would say to you, fine, you can have that, but let's do this for Bob. Let's just do this. Give it another shot. What have you got to lose?
And let's see if it yields fruit.
Exactly. And you know what?
And if it does, we've learned something.
Yeah, and you know what? This is about our country too. All right, this is we sit here, we bemoan and we talk about it. Well, you know what? So. You know how many people who have had success? Abraham Lincoln, even. He lost it. How many times they've been defeated, and yet they've gone back and they've persisted? And guess what? In the end, it paid off many, many a time. And that's what you have to do. And this is what America is about. It's about us standing together as one. United we stand. Isn't that a phrase that I've used?
Divided we fall. Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Renee Louise, I hate to do it, but I do have to ring off because we are run right up against it. Don't be such a stranger, though, please.
Well, I told you why. I
understand why. I do understand why, but you know, chime in any time. Email, phone, whatever works.
Yeah, and the only reason you don't hear from me, Bob, is that social concept called time, you know? And
Lord, don't I know.
Yeah, I hate it, and I'm literally, you know, my issues with my health and not having health insurance, and I'm so much better, but also I just... trying to stay above water, you know, and you know what that's all about too.
Yeah, I do too. When it's lapping at your chin.
Yeah, and it's like, oh gosh, I've got to get a couple hours of sleep because I got to get up and do it all over again.
Exactly.
Right now, this is a system I'm stuck with.
Precisely.
All the more reason to stand up.
Renee Louise, be well, dear, and I hope we'll talk soon.
Okay, thanks so much, Bob. Be safe in Washington, and if I can figure out, or I don't even know if I have it. If I can figure something out, it's to you.
All right, thank you. Talk soon.
Okay.
Bye now.
Okay, take care.
We are almost at the end of the program. I've got to say something very quick, because someone that we love very dearly is in poor health. And that is Peter Godbold. I was informed earlier today that he had been stricken, and he's, I'm told, doing better, but he needs your thoughts. If you're a praying type, he needs your prayers. And he needs the love that you can send out, even at a distance, because we do love Peter Godbold dearly. Thank you for joining in tonight. Thank you very much. Thank you to Peter Godbold for all he's done and will continue to do to keep the horn going. Thank you to Ben Birch, to John Fox. Thank you to those of you who do contribute. Thank you to those who answered the call last night. We are in sore need of significant help just to keep things paid off going into August. Got that, by the way, the bill is due letter from the internet folks the other day. They're not kidding. Be well. I will hope to talk to you soon, one way or the other. At the very latest, I will be back next Monday. Thanks to Cold River Mountain Watch as well. Always. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you.
Cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Another lovely Friday in the hills as late afternoon progresses into evening. A minute and a half past the hour, golden light bathing the Horn Studio via our south-facing windows. It's Friday. It's Friday on the front porch. Kick back, relax, have a seat in the rocking chair. Put your feet up on the porch rail. Mama won't mind. Not on Friday. And just say what's on your mind. Nothing in particular. We can have a little fun. We can have a little serious. We can have just about anything we want to. We can have a pull out of the jug over there, the one with the old corn cob in the top. Maybe an ice cold long neck. sitting in the zinc galvanized wash tub up to their bottle caps in ice and a little rock salt thrown on to make it extra cold. Or maybe just a glass of sweet iced tea, lemon or no lemon, however you want it, or... Well, I won't offer you the water because this is West Virginia and it ain't safe to drink. That's what we call being neighborly, not poisoning the folks who show up to visit. It's Front Porch Friday. Come on by. And I don't know about you, but I want to get the ugly stuff out of the way first. Let's just sweep out the racist trash of the right wing so we can move on to things that aren't quite so nasty. Get the nastiness out and we can enjoy our camaraderie and our collegiality and our neighborliness. Lean over, somebody run down to the back fence and open it up so folks can come up from the backyard way too, would you? But before too many more people get here, let's get the racist trash out in the trash where racist trash belongs. I'm talking, of course, about racist trash in chief, Flush Flimball, that street drug junkie that is now the head of the Repig Lickin' Party. He showed up on, God almighty. He showed up on Greta Van Susteren's show. We can't tell if Greta was surprised or not because her brows are permanently arched in a look of inquisitive surprise by the virtue of the miracles of plastic surgery and Botox. I'm told that every time Greta does try to raise her eyebrows, her pantyhose come up. Yeah, bad old gag, sorry. But anyway... Let's get the racist trash out of the way. Flush Flimball showed up on Greta Van Susteren's show on the phony news network, I mean Fox, and engaged in a little colloquy with Greta. Well, at least Greta could feel safe because, after all, she doesn't have to worry about Flush trying to grope her, what with her not being a little Dominican boy and all. Discussing the Henry Louis Gates issue, which is just continues to astonish me. Now the big, has he apologized enough? Has he apologized to the police enough? There we go, apologizing again. I said they were stupid. I didn't mean to say they were stupid when I said they were stupid, just that they were, uh-oh. You see the problem with apologies? So Greta Van Susteren and legal expert Flush Flimball, and he does, he's a legal expert. He's had several brushes with the law now. He knows a little bit about the system. But they want to talk about Henry Louis Gates and Obama's response to it. Here we go.
I think Obama is largely misunderstood by a lot of people. I think his associations in his young life and early adult life matter. The people that mentored him matter. And we're finding out this guy's got a chip on his shoulder. He's angry at this country. He's not proud of it.
He's an angry black man, angry at this country, and he's not proud of it. And by not proud of it, he doesn't mean he's not proud of the fact that he's an angry man. He's not proud of this country. When this country... There's so much to be proud of, my friends. So very much to be proud of. We have the Klan to be proud of, who protected our white women for nearly 150 years now. Thank God for the Klan. We have skinheads to be proud of. Why isn't Barack Obama proud of America?
Talked about health care last night, never once talked about the greatness of our health care. Once again, when it comes
to... Where is it?
Oh, dear, this is getting off to a rough start. I'm yelling already. I'm sorry. The greatness of our health care.
Well, I guess if you're Flush Flimball, it is great. Because you can sort of dodge into a little program and go off to
Arizona and talk to the horses for a little bit, just like Mrs. McCain did, and come back and swear that you're clean, and then a year or so later, you get busted with an illegal prescription for Viagra flying off on an all-boys weekend to the Dominican Republic? Plenty to be proud of in our health care system. I'm sure that if Rush Limbaugh had a serious illness, it would be taken care of. Oh, wait, he did. He abused drugs so much. He abused narcotics, street drugs, that is, so much that he drove himself deaf. And being a millionaire, the healthcare industry responded to him with all the alacrity and aplomb that they responded to, for instance, Steve Jobs in hustling him up.